Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Well, this is it.
Seven-four-seven-four-505B.
What wing?
Maximum wing, block 9.
Standard release?
Parole 3 out of 5, good behavior.
Give me a minute. One Timex digital watch, broken. One unused prophylactic. One soiled. Boots, black. Belt, black. One black suit jacket. One pair of black suit pants. One hat, black. One pair of sunglasses. $23.07. Sign here.
It is 29 minutes after the hour of 1, and this is the month of March in the year of our Lord 2011. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network. Thank you for joining us on this Thursday. Even though it feels like not even so much a Friday, it just feels like a day out of space, out of time. It feels like a void that's inside a vacuum, that's inside a bubble, that's inside an emptiness, that's inside some sort of a chasm or a chamber.
It's Thursday.
Wacky, sure.
Wacky, wacky, wacky Thursday.
I think I speak for both of us, though, when I say that yesterday felt so much like a Friday that today when I woke up, I did that thing. I'm getting ahead of myself. Let me just say, coming up today, we got the Corpse Watch, Taser Watch, Penis Watch, and those three things can only mean one thing when combined. Anna Griffin from the Oregonian will be here. She'll be joining us to discuss life in Portland and in these United States. Also, I think she drove to Disneyland and back with her kids.
Yeah, in a van. Apparently with, like, another family with even more kids.
All kinds of fun.
Yes.
All I know is that when she got back into Portland, I'm not implying she doesn't love her children. Clearly she does. But, you know, there could be such a thing as too much of a good thing. So she got back, and I just saw some Twitter post that she put up. She said, you know, like a friend who wishes you well on your way, you know, your way to Disneyland, or a friend who watches your house while you're at Disneyland. You know, that's one thing. A friend who offers to babysit your children the instant you get back from 2 weeks with them at Disneyland, that's a true friend. So we'll ask her about that. So she was ensconced in a small rolling rectangle of hell, I believe, with several other people for a few days. We'll talk to her about that. Anna Griffin's going to be here. Corpse Watch, Taser Watch, Penis Watch. We'll do the top five. Today's top five. Top five songs I always seem to hear playing at a Winco when I'm there late in the evening. That'll be later on the day. Top five songs I always seem to hear playing at a Winco when I'm there late in the evening. We'll do our Justified recap, and by we, I mean Don Taylor, because I didn't really... Because you asked me... And the thing is, you asked me in a way that indicated that you just assumed that I had. It was that sort of like... It was like you were asking just like a sort of a cursory inquiry. Well, like it was an interrogative statement given just for the purpose of, you know, just checking it off your mental list, because there's no universe in which I would not watch Justified.
You love Justified. Justified is awesome. You have responsibilities to me, the show, our
people.
Listeners. You don't usually fall down on the job, and
no.
I just assumed you would have fulfilled your obligations re-watching Justified.
So you would think. And here's the other thing, is I don't really have any explanation as to why I didn't, because, I mean, we were here yesterday, and I said, hey, we said it, I think, three different times. I think
Justified.
We said it on...
Woo, Justified!
We said it on KPAM, we said it on the Legion of News, and then we said it here. We're like, oh, I can't wait to go home and watch Justified tonight. That's what I'm going to do with my evening. Here's the other thing. Last night, so, you know, I do most of my show prep the night before. I don't really do it the morning of. And I know a lot of guys are like, you know... A lot of guys are like, they get up at like the crack, they're like up at 6 a.m., and they're like at it, boy. I mean, they're just like finding, you know, finding things and getting the sound and news and writing down the, you know, glib observations about the various relatable happenings in their life and whatever. And, you know, what's a common frustration that I can vent that will, that will bond me to the audience and the audience to me and whatever. And they're just creating all these notes. I can't do any of this stuff in the morning. In the morning, I can just barely stand. It's all I can do just to get for myself to the John without just falling over and you just, you know, keeling down the basement stairs and being found later by the dogs. So I do all my stuff the night before. Last night, I'm just setting up the soundboard, and, you know, the soundboard is in case we need just a little,
sound? Oh.
There we go. Like that. Or if, just for whatever reason, if I just needed a, I get all that stuff ready. So what am I doing last night? I'm putting everything together. I'm like, hey, I got Anna Griffin's opening theme. I got the, we're the top five begs. I'm going to put together a top five. I got the something else I was putting together, like, you know, the news cuts and whatever. And then I consciously went out of my way to find and to load the Justified recap bed. And this is last night. This is last night at, like, I don't know, 9 o'clock. So it's within an hour of the show being on. Like, I can't wait to watch me some Justified. And I don't know. I have no. It's not even really an excuse or a... justification. I'm just the only conclusion I can come to is just really more of a reason, I think, than anything else, is just at the tail end of those 3 days, I had just completely, it wasn't even that I was tired, because the strange thing is I wasn't that tired last night. I mean, I think I just sort of passed some event horizon. I think my brain had just gone like, I guess we're just not sleeping. I think we're just staying awake. And I was like, okay, brain, you're in charge. You're the man. And so that I was just up for whatever, this morning was a whole different story about which we'll talk here in a second, but I stayed up last night, but it was that thing where I thought, well, what can I watch that's just going to be a low impact program for me while I'm waiting for Justified to come on? And then I put something on, you know what I ended up watching for, I swear to Christ, like 45 minutes last night? This is how exciting I am when I'm just left to my own devices. Because, you know, I'm a huge West Wing fan, but it wasn't even really the West Wing, because I have the whole, like, box set of all of it, you know, like all 7 seasons or whatever. So I have all 7 seasons, but of course they all come with extras, where it's, you know, this is supplemental material where it's like, a whole thing about, like, how they cast the show or, like, the writing process or whatever. So I just sat there and I racked up the extras for season 2, and I thought, well, I'll just stretch out for a bit and just watch a couple of these till that Justified show that I love so much comes on. Awesome. Yeah. Lean back in my chair. And I ended up watching, I think about an hour and a half later, I realized that I was watching a 14-minute documentary on C.J. Craig's Goldfish. That she has, and I'm not making that up, the goldfish bowl that she has on her desk, because apparently there's something they do with the prop that has to do with the, like, apparently if you look at the goldfish bowl on C.J. Craig's desk on the West Wing, every episode, the goldfish has a decorative item in its bowl that relates to that episode's plot somehow.
Oh, I did not know that.
So if there's some plot that has to do with, like, you know, the automotive industry or the highway department or whatever, there's a car in there. If there's something that has to do with the president or C.J. herself, there's, like, a little podium in there. If there's a whole... And so then what do I do? And I'm like, that's fascinating. I got to see that in action. Let me go dig up some episodes from season 2 and scan through looking for... So this is how I spend my time. I'm a DVD of a show that I've seen, I don't know, 500 times. And I'm scanning through frame by frame looking for goldfish bowls so I can look at the porcelain items contained therein. Just so I can find out something... that I already know because they just told me on the documentary, if you look in the goldfish bowl, hey, you're going to see like a thing, like a tire or something. That was then followed by a 22-minute extra in which the guy who did the design of the faux White House just walked through and showed you all of the rooms. And so this is the set we built for the Roosevelt room. Keep in mind, I am watching a documentary, so-called, I am watching a documentary I mean, I'm getting older. I mean, literally sitting there getting older, becoming fused to my chair while a guy spends time showing me something that I've already seen because it's in every episode of the show.
Yeah.
That's where the show takes place. It's the set. It's where the show happens. And I'm like, no, but you don't understand this. He's going to show me the room with no one in it. Won't that be exciting for 22 minutes? I watched the entire disc of West Wing Extras just, and I don't do a lot of, and maybe you don't either. You strike me as a person who maybe at this point in your life doesn't. Maybe you did, maybe when you were, maybe when you were a young single gal, maybe you did this. Were you just, that thing of just like, channel surfing or just not even really, but just sort of grazing on television, sort of just like whatever comes on. I don't really do that.
My husband does that, and it drives me freaking crazy.
A passive watcher of television.
He just sits there and just flips between things and looks at other things. And also, if we're watching TV in real time, because that's really right. When it happens, he can't stand commercials. But instead of just muting the commercial and letting it play out, he'll change the channel to something else. So then I'm sitting there going, okay, go back to the, I don't, but it's during the commercial. Yes, but I don't, because I hate like him when he comes back late and then I've missed a half a sentence and someone said something. So, but the thing is, I've actually forbidden him from doing it in the morning now, because on the mornings when we get up together,
it's too much.
I'm on my first cup of coffee and I've got my laptop and I'm surfing news and doing stuff and he's flipping back and forth and it's like, it's cartoon. It's KGW news. It's a Perry Mason rerun. And I was like, stop it. So he's not allowed to do that in the morning anymore.
I know I've asked this before, but I know you have the very, very basic cable at the lowest level of cable. But
we don't even legally have cable at this point. Oh. We canceled all of our cable.
Okay.
But the coax is still plugged into it, so just because, I guess...
Well, that's not illegal. They just didn't take it away.
I don't even think it's a matter of taking away it or not. I think it's a matter of... You know, we still have Comcast because they do my Wi-Fi.
Well, you can't.
And there's a certain amount of cable that just will leak in through the tubes anyway.
Well, see, that's the thing. See, I don't think you can actually get it now without. You can't turn your cable off anymore, your cable television. I don't think you can do that because you have cable internet, right?
Yeah.
So if you have cable internet, I don't think. And when I say you can't turn it off, I don't mean like. I just think that, like, they no longer offer the option of not having the cable TV at all, because they know that everybody would take that option and that they would lose the $7 or whatever they jack out of me every month for that.
Yeah, so we have just like crazy cable where it's the network programs and then just other things that seem to be kind of there, but we don't know why, like Discovery.
Yeah.
Because it's on Channel 7, we get Discovery.
Which seems like it ought to be on Channel like 74 or something, right? Yeah. So I think you no longer, the idea that you can get the a la carte service, it's strange because right as they, there was that whole floor fight they had just for years and years and years about whether or not they were going to be allowed to give you a la carte television channels. Like, I only want the Golf Network. And they, the cable company said, well, no, we're gonna lose money because the more popular channels subsidize the Golf Network and whatever. And we just kept saying, like, we don't care. I don't care. Figure it out yourself. You're the business. Give me the game show channel.
Yeah, I don't need any shopping channels, much less four, which I have, by the way, now. And two Spanish language channels and C-SPAN.
Well, you and I are on different sides of the fence in terms of the shopping channel, but I will say that there are any number of channels that I don't need. And my whole thing with the cable company, and that's just Comcast, anybody, was just like, you know what, do the math on your own time. Like, you're the business, I'm the customer. Give me what I want. It's like going to a restaurant and a guy just telling you that you are required to have side dishes and a dessert and 15 cups of coffee and also something from the bar. And then, like, a thing he's going to go down to Jack in the Box and get you. You know, and I'm like, I don't want that. I just want a steak. And you're like, no, you can't have just a steak. So they finally solved that. But I think just like to be dicks about it, like just in a fit of pique. And we have many, many listeners who listen to Comcast. Everybody's got to work somewhere. And I love your – here's the thing. In the cable internet, I know it's fashionable to beat up on Comcast for their internet, just like it's fashionable to say that AT&T drops every – you can't ever get a call. They drop constantly. I've never experienced either of those things. I got fine reception with AT&T, my iPhone. I got fine internet from Comcast. I have no complaints, no more than with any other company, on Earth. But just to be dicks, I think, when they got told that they had to offer a la carte channels, then they did this thing of just saying, like, well, okay, then you're going to get all of these 13 channels, whether or not you want them, at the basic
have to have
cable.
A phone.
And that you can't go below a certain level of cable subscription and the landline thing.
Yeah. So, like, but I don't want a landline. But I just want Wi-Fi.
I know. It's a huge pain. Anyway, What was my point here? Oh, yeah, so I don't think you're getting cable illegally. I think you've just gotten it down to the... My point here is that I think for, like, I don't know, like $4 a month or something, you could have, like, a TiVo thing hooked up to that. That Patrick would no longer have to do that. Because the deal with the TiVo is...
Oh, that's right. We were also talking about you having extra TiVo.
I got like 3 of them in my basement.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing is, and you know, you say, well, you know, you know, I don't want to have to pay the subscription. First of all, I think at least one of them has the lifetime subscription. Secondly, you know, you don't need that for it to work.
Right.
That's a thing that they just... That's only if you need the on-screen TV guide, which
you
probably don't.
Yeah, if you just want to use it as a DVR, then...
Because then, you know, it is, the show starts at 8. Mm-hmm. You start watching at 8:20. No commercials because you're 20 minutes ahead. So,
well, I've also been thinking about having the Comcast guy come and hook up whatever they have to hook up to the giant free TV so that I can just watch that for TV.
Do you know how much it must anger certain sections of the audience every time you say that you've got this 79-inch television or whatever on your wall? How
55.
Big is it?
55-inch television.
And it... You know, but it's not really hooked up to be a television as such. It's basically just there as
it's
like a
huge monitor.
You can just project water lilies onto it every now and again.
Well, but it is TV, because that's the thing, is honestly, 90% of the television I watch, and I know that there are a lot of people we know that are like this, 90% of the television I watch at this point is stuff that I am watching via my computer. Or, you know, and that, and much of it is legal. It's like Eric Snyder gave me this Roku thing.
What a telling statement that is.
That I haven't figured out.
Much of it legal.
Well, you know, I think we've reached a point where we don't have to pretend that nobody downloads stuff that maybe they shouldn't be downloading. I think we've reached a point of it's, you know, it's not just crazy hackers and like, you know, this 0.666% of the population that actually knows how to find a torrent site. You know, and download the last episode of Grey's Anatomy, you know. And I've got this Roku thing that I still haven't figured out how to make work. But that works via my Wi-Fi and will let me watch Netflix and Hulu, like, via that thing. And it has its own little remote. And I got to figure out how to plug that in. But it's like, you know, it's you don't really need TV anymore.
Well,
you know?
Yeah, in the sense that you don't need...
Broadcast television.
You don't need... Well, it's not even that, is it? Yeah, you don't need the over-the-air television.
Yeah.
And one could argue, you know, whether or not you need cable. You know, if you're gonna be you know, if you want to watch like stuff on HBO or something as it airs, you know, like, you know, you need for that. But that's pretty much it at this point. I was just thinking about this. I was just trying to buy a whole different thing that you just said, which is that. I mean, I talk about this. This is a frequent theme on the Rick Emerson shows: is the glorious, awe-inspiring wonder of now. Because now is awesome, and tomorrow will be better than now, even. But the fact that you actually... I mean, if I could just go back and, like, see the 1987 you, or whatever, and just get your lumber second and say, hey, I got this thing for you, and then I give you, like, either, like, the Roku, or the iPhone, or the laptop, or, you know, a television the size of a football field, or whatever. And I said, like, you got, you know, hey, if I just gave you one of those things, you'd be like... This is the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life. Who are you, Oracle of Time? And I would vanish. Now you've got all of them, and you actually are acquiring new magical devices so quickly that you don't even have time to master one of them before you get, like, three more.
Yeah.
If I picked any one of those things I just mentioned, and I'm not saying there's a knock because I'm the same way, your laptop, your iPhone, your Roku, your big screen television, I would imagine you know how to run about 40% of the operations on any one of those things, if that.
Yeah.
I mean, you could spend the next year probably with your iPhone and not figure out all the stuff it does. Probably same thing with the Roku. It would take you a long time to figure out all the magical things you can do with it. But you don't have time because somebody also gave you a blender, you know, that, like, will mow the lawn and it will, you know, also operate as a cloud car for you when you need to get to work.
Well, and every time I turn around, there's like a new thing that, first of all, is promising to make things better and easier for me, but also involves me having to do something to acquire it and figure it out. Like, I was on my way to work today, and I was listening to one of the most recent Freakonomics podcasts.
Right.
And I'm listening to the Freakonomics podcast, and as I'm doing it,
Is this the episode regarding fecal transplant?
That, and then there was the little three-minute thing about their Twitter feed
right.
that they had, too. Those were the two most recent ones. And yes, I was listening to the one about fecal transplant.
Mm.
And I've been wrestling with that thing because... As someone I was speaking to yesterday said, that they would love to have an iPhone, except that they don't want to use iTunes. Because iTunes is a huge pain in the ass.
Right.
And I agreed. I said, they're absolutely right. iTunes is a huge pain in the ass. But everything else I get with the iPhone is so wonderful and magical and stuff.
It's a net
gain. I'm willing to wrestle with iPhones, but yeah. iTunes, but it is annoying. And having to go through the whole process of figuring out how to subscribe, download, sync, get the podcast to my phone, blah, 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 blah. And I was actually thinking about that this morning, how irritating that was. Then I'm listening to the Freakonomics thing and said, this is brought to you by, I think they said it was called Scratcher or something. Scratcher.
Stitcher
for the iPhone
that will
gather all your podcasts together and just load them to your phone. And you don't have to do anything. You just download this free app. And I'm like going, okay, I am doing that this afternoon.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes. Stitcher sort of like, it's like those things we used to have back in 1995 where you would tell it what kind of stories you liked and it would create a custom newspaper on the internet for you every morning. The Emerson Times, where with just the stories you like, it does that with podcasts. It just stitches them together on the fly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then
I only listen to a couple of podcasts, but having to like go through the whole iTunes thing of, you know, acquiring them and syncing and dragging and waiting, it's just really freaking annoying. I don't like iTunes. I admit it. I really don't like it. I love everything else about my phone.
I don't dispute that. I have no issue with that. It is one of those moments where I'm glad that we are speaking to each other and to this audience, because this is really one of the few places in the world where we can have these complaints and not just sound like complete dicks.
Yeah.
You know?
By the way, yes, earthquake, tsunami, people starving, AIDS in Africa. Yes, and I'm like sitting here, damn it, I'm inconvenienced by iPhone.
I don't want to wait 12 seconds for
iTunes.
This to download.
I don't know how to get this old podcast off of my phone.
Anyway.
My life sucks.
The whole reason this came up, though, is to say that I'm not a passive TV watcher, and I'm not I certainly don't flip around, because that's a thing that, like, as soon as I got the TiVo back in, like, whatever, 1999 or 2000 or something, it was like the reverse of whatever an inoculation is. I suddenly became way more susceptible to commercials, because it's like they'd lost their power. They would sort of bounced off my brain. Not a commercial. But as soon as I got the TiVo, man, it's like about 5 months after we got the TiVo, we went to visit some friends of ours in L.A., and we were in their house, and they were watching TV, and it went to a commercial break, and it was like 10-penny nails were being driven into my ears. I mean, it was like my brain had been filled with termites. And I was just, turn it off, oh, it burns! And I just couldn't, because I just had lost all the sort of immunity, the mental callus that I had built up to protect myself from television commercials, which are always unbelievably loud and shrill. I mean, I got no problem with advertising. I mean, I really don't. I mean, I have no issue with advertising. Everybody's got to make a living. But it's like, it doesn't have to be bad, and most of it is. That's the thing, most of it is just terrible.
Well, sitting in the KPAM studio and then, like...
Let's tread carefully. Getting off.
Well, no, I'm not going to say anything specific, but I mean, yeah, radio advertising does have a very specific sort of pitch and tenor and sort of shrillness to it.
Especially when it's voiced by the client who thinks he's hilarious and his children.
You know? And so, yeah, and there's no need to really, like specify any particular one. It was the thing, we were both sitting there, and we're like, talk, do our talk thing, okay, take off the headphones, and then some ad was
like,
and both of us would just go, ugh, and you know, and just, it's like, it was like we were just being smacked in the head with something.
It really is. It is a time where bad advertising just, now more than ever, bad advertising really is... It's like the worst possible investment of your money if you're a company into bad advertising, because people just have zero tolerance for anything that isn't interesting or compelling at this point. So despite the fact that I'm not really a passive watcher, and I guess this wasn't channel flipping, because that's the thing, that I'm with you. I can't do that. I can't. That thing of, especially because, you know, they all take their commercial breaks at the same time. Television stations, radio stations. Here's a little secret. There's a thing called a clock, and it just tells you when to go to a break. If you're a TV show, if you're a movie of the week, whatever, all at the same time. So channel flipping really is effectively pointless. And whatever fraction of a second you gain shielding yourself from some awful car commercial, you're losing that in just in just sanity and blood pressure by just irritating yourself. But what I did is I just sat and I just watched this entire disc of West Wing extras. Literally, one section of it was just about how they pick out Alice and Janney's shoes. Mm. And I'm sitting there going, that's fantastic. And it was like some sort of weird, I don't know, it was like some sort of like the visual Ativan drip just going right into my brain. I was like, that's awesome. And then at the end of the night, whenever that was, I mean, I went to bed, I don't know, like 1, 1:32, something like that. I mean, you know, this is a little early for me, but, you know, not too late. And I thought, well, that's great. That's been a productive evening. I came home, relaxed, got everything watched I needed to watch. It closed the little soundboard in front of me that actually said in huge letters, Justified! And then it woke up this morning, came in here, and I have to tell you, swear to God, it didn't even occur to me until you asked me right before we got ready to start the show, like an hour ago. You're like, hey, did you watch Justified last night? And I went, no, I didn't. I just lost track of days.
I don't think anyone would mind if we put it off for another day so that you could watch it, because it really was, there was stuff in it that was really quite good and really definitely worth discussing.
Well, maybe
if I talk about it, then it'll be like spoiling it for
you. Well, I don't care. Maybe I'll touch on it just a bit. We'll have you do like a glancing overview of it.
Yeah.
Because there are people who watched it last night, and they shouldn't be punished for my sins, Don.
Okay.
Why should they bear the mark of Cain? Because of my failure. So, anyway, so we'll do that just real briefly. Then we can do a more in-depth thing on that tomorrow. Coming up today, Corpse Watch, Taser Watch, Penis Watch, Anna Griffin from the Oregonian. A little bit of Justified talk. Top five songs I always seem to hear playing in a Winco late in the evening. And Don Taylor tracking the following headlines. Did we already do this?
No, we didn't.
Headlines for you on this Thursday.
I've got people dying from bacteria they got from hospital-fed IVs. A man angry at his estranged wife, so he broke into a hotel room with a chainsaw. And a Trimec driver being punched in the face.
That's fantastic. By the way, this person says, every time Dawn talks about her TV, I feel like kicking a kitten. You know, like you do.
Yeah.
Okay.
I used that giant TV last night. By the way, my new thing is Patrick and I was curious.
Just to hold some plants?
Well, I'm curious about the TV show The Event on NBC, which is kind of sci-fi-ish, and I had watched the first episode and hadn't really followed up, and now it's in its second season. So Patrick and I decided that we would watch it. We would catch up on The Event. So that's sort of that's our junk food viewing now for, like, last night we ordered a pizza because we were both too tired to make food. I came home. By make, you mean open. Well, you remember how...
Or to heat slightly.
You were talking about how tired you were, although your brain was still awake.
Yes.
And it was the same thing where I came home and we both just did that thing of, you want to make food? No. Do you want to get food? I don't know. We've still got some chicken in the fridge. You could just go grab it and put it on a plate. And I was like, or I could just pick up my phone and make someone bring us pizza. I'm like, hooray. So we did that. And yeah, we have I have The Wire, which actually has become sort of this tasty, tasty gourmet thing that I have set aside now. And I watch, like, every day or two, I'll watch an episode of The Wire. But it's so good, I kind of am like...
It's a full meal.
Yeah. And then there's the thing of The Event, where we're just kind of powering through all these episodes of The Event, which really isn't that good, but it's not bad enough to stop watching.
Right.
And now we sort of feel committed to find out what happens.
That's the thing is, I will occasionally enter that strange zone where the show has not actively alienated me enough that I will just make a clean break from it. But you recognize at the same time, you're like, well, this isn't very good. I'm getting older by the moment here. I should be watching something of quality, reading a book, going outside maybe, but then you just continue to watch.
And then somewhere in the back of your mind, you're going, You know, Don, as soon as you get caught up on this, they're going to cancel it.
Yeah.
And you're never going to find out what happens anyway.
That's the way that works. All right. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. We'll talk more about the event here in a second. We'll wait for Anna Griffin to get in because I suspect that she might watch that. I don't know, but she might because she's, you know, she's a big nerd. So,
yeah,
I mean,
she is.
If it's something that is are they still doing that thing? What channel is that on?
NBC, I think.
I was going to ask about the Sci-Fi Network. Are they still doing the thing of just... Does the guy still do the thing of going like, sci-fi?
I don't know. I don't have cable anymore.
Yeah, but you obtain... It's like, what's his name in Office Space? Well, it becomes ours. You obtain programs from Sci-Fi. You watch their made for Sci-Fi movies and stuff.
But
I guess you don't have the wraparound elements, though.
Right.
You don't have the formatics, though.
No, you don't.
All right. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. We'll do this. We'll go to the news desk. We'll do a couple stories, take a break, come back on the other side. Anna Griffin from The Oregonian. Hey, everybody, look over there. It's Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
9 of 19 patients who were infected with bacteria that got into their blood after they were fed intravenously have died in 6 Alabama hospitals. State Health Officer Donald Williamson says preventative actions have been taken to ensure no one else gets infected with bacteria.
Maybe like moving away from Alabama.
Notified their customers immediately that there was this potential problem. The pharmacy took their product out of use, that the hospitals didn't use any additional product that they had received from the pharmacy. We know that there was a recall of all the product.
So I'm confused. So this is, it got into them. How?
They were fed intravenously. So it was like people who needed the,
right,
not saline drip, but, you know, the sugar water drip or whatever it is,
okay,
that they give you to feed
like
you.
Like if you're on a hunger strike or something, yeah.
Or just, you know,
you can't eat.
You can't eat solid food.
Yeah, and so it's, but it's like a glucose drip or something. Yeah,
yeah. And they were shipped, whatever this was, it was shipped to six different hospitals, and 19 people were infected with bacteria that apparently was in the manufacturing process of it. And 9 of those people have died. Williamson says patients undergoing such care already had serious health challenges.
One of the things that we are working through now in the ongoing investigation is to try to ascertain how many of the 9 deaths were probably attributable to the infection versus how many of them were simply coincidental infections.
There's a lot of covering of asses going on in every quadrant and corner right now. I myself am busy burning many, many documents in a glass barrel in my office. I cannot be bothered for future comments.
A man in Spring Hill, Florida, has found Florida.
I know. Just doing the best I can over here.
A man from Spring Hill, Florida, who found his estranged wife in a hotel room with another man.
Where?
Florida. Was arrested after he knocked out the hotel room window with a chainsaw and punched the man in the face. Timothy Ray Brooks, 49, was accused of breaking the windows of 2 cars, one of which belonged to the night clerk of the Best Western Hotel on Cortez Boulevard in Spring Hill, Florida. The clerk told deputies that Brooks came to the hotel about 3 a.m. Tuesday looking for his wife. Brooks was carrying a chainsaw, and when the clerk refused to give any information about guests, Brooks walked away. The clerk said he heard a lot of banging outside and went outside to see the rear passenger window of his car had been smashed. A witness told deputies Brooks punched the car windows with his fist until they broke. He then walked upstairs carrying the chainsaw. A short time later, the witness saw Brooks leave the hotel and saw the broken window. Deputies said that the victim had gone on a date with Brooks' estranged wife. After the date, they went to the motel room. They heard a loud knocking at the door, then saw Brooks crash through the window holding the chainsaw.
That's a thing he probably didn't anticipate, even if he's... Now, are they divorced?
They're estranged.
They're estranged.
That means they're separated.
Yeah.
Brooks punched... The chainsaw, however, wasn't running, so...
Does it need to be running, really, to accomplish, the peeing yourself part of the equation? Mm. Probably not.
Yeah, so then Brooks just punched the man 3 times in the face and head and left when the man called the sheriff's office. Then he saw that the driver's side window of his car had been smashed.
You know, here's the thing. I was going to say maybe the guy at the front desk would have given him more information if he'd gone in not holding a chainsaw. On the other hand, if you're holding a chainsaw, you feel like people are probably going to do what you ask, you know? Like you say, hey, are you going to finish that? Also, I'm holding a chainsaw. And the guy goes, no, you can have it. You know, also, where is my wife? Here's another question I have. And this is probably not contained within the story, but how did he know they were at this motel?
I don't know. Maybe he followed them.
Or maybe it's a tiny little town, or maybe it's just the hump and snore that everybody goes to.
Could be.
Wherever this is. What is the name of the town?
Spring Hill, Florida.
I have no idea I have no idea. Spring Hill just sounds like one of those made up towns or that they would just use to sell you like some sort of like a chicken glaze.
Yeah.
Anyway,
the guy who was on the date with the wife, by the way, said he only known her for a few days and had never met the husband.
Yeah,
I'm sure it was quite alarming.
You know, well, that's that thing about, you know, that's maybe where you decide to ask a few more questions on Match.com or whatever in next time before you decide to go on a date with
it. Husband? Yes. No. Owns chainsaw?
Yeah.
Yes. No.
And the whole like divorced. That's, you know, divorced. I mean, you know, whatever. You know, there's a lot of divorced people. That's fine. It doesn't have anything wrong with being estranged or separated or whatever. But that does seem to increase the likelihood that some guy named Phil is just going to come looking for you with a meat thermometer and a ball peen hammer.
Have you? Were you always in your single days good about staying away from the married ladies?
Well, I mean, eventually. You know,
you learned your lesson in that regard, is what
well,
you're saying.
I think we've discussed this before, haven't we? Haven't we talked about this?
Because
there's no way to engage in this conversation. I just by dint of not just saying yes. Or whatever the right answer, a good person would have said just now. Like, yes, that, no, I was always a right and upstanding. By dint of not just saying that, I now already look like an ass.
Yeah.
So I already just look like a dick. I will say this, that I there was a window of time, I think, when I was young, when I was in my early 20s, where that sort of that I think mattered less to me than probably than it should have. And it mattered less to me, certainly, than I think it does when you're later on. You're 25, 30, 35, 40, probably beyond. You have either you just realize, well, that's That's just not a very sporting thing to do, or that's going to get me set on fire at some point. And so for one reason or the other, either out of self-interest or just you have a sort of moment where you go, maybe not. Maybe that's not kosher. But I think that's less of an issue when you are a younger man. I will tell you this,
though. Also, when you're just a younger person, you don't really think about consequences as much.
Yeah. Well, and also you figure – and I think in my own defense, with some justification, you figure – well, I mean, she's, you know, I'm hideous. We've talked about this before. I'm hideous, so she's going to be humping me. Clearly, things can't be good at home. I mean, really, like, what kind of marriage could that possibly be if, like, in her spare time, she's spending it with, you know, with a spotty-faced lad such as myself? Like, you know, really, what am I ruining there? Obviously, nothing. So it seems like that ship has sailed and been sunk by the British already. There was a moment. Do you remember the girl I told you about where we were? I wasn't even in high school when this happened. It just makes me sound like a retard because I was like, I don't know, I was like 22 or something. Some girl where it's like we were, there's no way to, let me ask you this.
All right.
How would you, I don't mean for this to sound awkward. I almost want to bring Anna Griffin in for this conversation, but then that makes it sound sort of skeezy. And I don't mean for it to sound that way. I'm just, she might find this amusing. But it's like the phrase making out just doesn't, it just makes you sound, I mean, you can't, there's a certain point in your life after which you can't say you were making out because then it's like, you know, you were like behind the bleachers, you know, well, during band practice
but
or something.
There's really no other word for that particular activity. I mean, if you're
petting,
if you're fully, yes. Yeah, you're making time.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you're making out, you're clothed and you're doing all that stuff, but you haven't progressed to you know, because usually when you say you're intimate with someone,
that means the
clothes are coming
off.
I think making out is a perfectly valid phrase.
Well, so I think I mentioned this story that I was making out with this girl in this car when I lived in Utah, and she kind of stopped everything for a second. And she's like, "Hold on, I have to get something." And I thought, "Aha, you know, sex is on." But she had to get the soundtrack to Vision Quest because she wanted to make out to "Crazy for You" by Madonna. Like that was like the song she had. Like it was like, I don't know if it was like I was fulfilling some weird. If I looked a lot like a guy that she always wanted to make out with in high school to that song, and she was like spent her whole life looking for a guy that looked similar to him. Well, you know, he looks just like Jeremy. Let's stop and talk to him. You know, and then it's like, and then I just became the wish fulfillment or whatever. But so that same girl. I wondered at the time, like, why we were making out in her car. And then later she's like, so, you know, there's the second or third time we went out. She invited me, you know, back to her place. And I'm like, you know, okay, hey now. And so we go back to her place. And this is, I think, the third time over maybe, like, as many weeks. And we go into her apartment. And it wasn't on the way in, but it was on the way out some hours later where I was, you know, I don't know, I was just sort of adjusting my scarf before heading out into the brisk Utah wind. And I saw on the table just a big sheaf of papers. It was something about divorce. And I can't remember if I asked or if I actually – I may have asked what they were, but I don't think so. I think I actually just – she was still in the She was still in the boudoir. I think I actually just picked them up and read them, and she had just that morning filed for a divorce. And for like a day and a half, I felt a little guilt about that because I was hoping that I had not been. Because here's the, and every guy knows this, what you don't ever want to do. And there's a little advice from me to you kids out there, if you're maybe just entering manhood, maybe you're just going out there and you're strolling the open plain of male female relationships. And I think John Mellencamp of all people actually said this the best. John Mellencamp said something really, really true. He said that all young men view themselves as being gunslingers to some degree, which sounds dumb unless you are or have been, you know, or have been or have really spent a lot of time with young guys. Where all young guys view themselves as sort of a rogue out there playing fast and loose with the rules, following his own compass, making his own way, taking
on
what
a
this
steel horse I ride.
Exactly, right? And it's like, and you will do these things of like, you know, when you're leaving the chick's house in the morning, and really you're just humping some girl at a duplex, you know, in Provo or whatever. And meanwhile, you're like, you know, you're walking to the car going, "That's right, I am in fact the baddest thing ever to walk on two legs." I remember remember that this one morning, this is all you need to know about me. And then I swear to God, I'll finish the anecdote, then we'll break and we'll come back with Anna Griffin, who's probably sitting in the kitchen wondering why she wastes her time here every week. But I remember this is one morning where I was I had been at a lady's house over through the course of the evening, and I was leaving early the next was leaving early the next morning because the... It doesn't really matter. It was leaving early the next morning because the goal was to like get out of there before her kid woke up. You know, of course, because then it's just like, you know, are you my new daddy? And then it's just awkward. So I'm like waking up early enough so that I can leave before there's, you know, the stirring in the next room and she's got to go do, you know, like got to go pour Apple Jacks into a bowl or something. So I'm like, I'll see you later. Bye. It's been a great time. Respect you. And walking to my car, getting into my car and whatever I was driving at that point and driving, you know, down like State Street or something in Utah. And it's like I'm driving down State Street in Utah. I'm listening to a Meat Loaf album and just thinking. And I remember just looking at the window and thinking, this is as good as it gets. Jesus. Anyway, but what you don't ever want to be, this is my, what you don't ever want to be is the, you know, is that guy, because everybody goes through that phase, and women probably have some. Do women have some equivalent to that where you, like, you know, where you do view yourself as just being, you know, like you're just sort of a high plains drifter of love?
Yeah. So there's a similar sort of a thing where you feel just very, sometimes you just feel really hot.
Yeah.
You know? Then you usually end up getting like a glimpse of yourself unexpected in a store window or something. Go, oh my God, what was I thinking? But you have that thing where you can delude yourself sometimes when you look at yourself, you know, and the makeup's good and your hair's just perfect and you're wearing something where the cleavage is just right and you maybe have like the best pair of shoes ever and you're like going, oh yeah, I got it going on.
Here's what we'll do. Well, let's take a break here. We'll finish. We'll come back on the other side. I'll wrap all this up because we can't push this any longer. And then Anna Griffin will join us and. You know, probably at some point, leave again. Corpse Watch, Taser Watch, Penis Watch, all that coming up. And top five songs I always seem to hear playing in a Winco late in the evening. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Stay there, won't you please? We return momentarily. Don't go anywhere. This is the Emerson News Network, ladies and gentlefolk. We're back after this.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
This bulkhead's built of fallen brethren bones. We all do what we can. We endure our fellow man. And we sing our songs to the head frames, kicks and moans. And it's 1, 2, 3 on the wrong side of the lee. What were you meant for? What were you meant for? And it's 7, 8, 9, you get your shuffle back in line. And if you ever make it to 10, you won't make it again. And if you ever make it to 10, you won't make it again. And you won't make a dime on this gray granite mountain mine. Of dirt you're made, into dirt you will return. So while we're living here, let's get this little one thing clear. There's plenty of men to die, you don't jump your turn. And it's 1, 2, 3 on the wrong side of the lead. What were you meant for? What were you meant for? And it's 7, 8, 9, you got your shuffle back. Ever make it to 10, you won't make it again. And if you ever make it to 10, you won't make it again. Make it to 10, you won't make it again. And if you ever make it to 10, you won't make it again. And if you ever make it to 10, you won't make it again.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us on this Thursday. It is 503-505-6964. Weren't we talking about getting a big klaxon or a sign or just something like a Thursday, like a bat signal that went up in the sky that just said Thursday?
So we knew that it was Thursday. So you understood fully that it was Thursday. Because you'll
expect.
Say Thursday, you'll hear the word Thursday, but you seem to, week after week, forget all that that means.
I should have a Thursday outfit that I wear, something sort of bedazzled that just says Thursday across the front. You were listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. In just a moment, we'll be joined by Oregonian columnist and stylish woman of the world, Anna Griffin. Also coming up today, Taser Watch, Penis Watch, Corpse Watch, plus the top five songs I always seem to hear in a Winco late in the evening. Coming up here in just one moment. Oh, the hell of it. Let's just get to what everybody wants. Joining us now from the Oregonian, author of a thrice weekly column about life in Portland and Multnomah County and these United States, Anna Griffin. Hello there. How are you?
I am cranky.
Are you?
I had one of those Portland experiences on the way over here where I was running a little late and was in a coffee shop that shall remain nameless in the hood because I like it. And
what part of town do you live in, generally speaking?
I live in Northeast. This was in Southeast on my way over here. And it was one of those Portland experiences where all I want is a cup of coffee. And I have the cash in my hand, and I'm ready to pay. And the barista slash only person working there has to wait because she's making 8 non-fat soy lattes. And then she has to go talk to a friend about the zine that they're working on. And then she just can't take my fracking cash and give me my coffee, which I'm serving myself, by the way.
I was going to ask if it was a thing where she even had to do any work or if you just had to, like, pump it and just leave. Have you ever done this in a situation like that where you just want to go, like, I'm taking this, and they throw a 5 at them and just leave?
I have done that on some occasion. If I have close to exact change, I will do that. If it's not like buying this here, and just go.
This place keeps a tab for regular customers up on the board, and I don't go there enough to, and I don't really believe in that sort of thing anyway. Communism, you know.
was this place in Northern Exposure?
No. And so I have time as she's making the 8 soy lattes for her friends to notice like $50, $75. Rusty owes $85 for his daily chai mochaccino.
Why doesn't Rusty try getting a job, pulling himself up by his own bootstraps, huh? All right. Well, boy, that K-Pam just gets all over you. You just leave the studio and it just sticks to you. It's just, it's there
get
forever.
Get a job, kids.
Hippie. Lord. Well, I'm glad you were able to power through it. Is the coffee worth it?
It's not bad.
Can I just say this, though? K-Pam has terrible coffee.
Oh, my God. It was the worst. Oh, it was horrible. And we can't actually even say why, because it's one of those things. I said, this coffee is horrible. And our engineer would say, oh, yeah, it's terrible. No, we do a trade-out with the company. It's,
there's no money. They're not even paying for it, which explains a lot. And I will say this, that I don't – and I really don't want to say the name of the place because it's a company that I – whose coffee I quite enjoy most of the time when I get it other places. But I think that maybe there's a special pile of coffee they give to people who aren't paying cash.
I think the problem actually – literally, I'm not – and I'm serious. I think the problem is their equipment. I think that it's not getting the water hot enough. So it's not really steeping the coffee properly because it was just nasty and bitter and acidic and not hot enough.
Right.
And so I think they need some maintenance on their
Because it is the heat.
I just spent a week outside Oregon, and you learn to appreciate good Portland coffee.
You were at the
very quickly.
What is the, and not that I even really know what the proper route would be, but what is the, could you drive to Disneyland or did you drive and fly back or how did you?
I drove. We with a close friend, we packed our 4 children into a minivan and we drove.
Is that like the 405 or what?
It's the 5 all the way.
All the way. I think we emailed about this. I was in New York a couple weeks ago and I had to, I put up something on Twitter about this that I was in Newark, New Jersey and I was, and it's like, and it wasn't even like at the airport. It was at a coffee shop where I said like, I'll have a cappuccino. And she just said, what's that? Like real brightly. And I just went, it's a thing that doesn't matter. Never mind. I'm leaving. Goodbye now. But when you leave, I mean, as much as that is sort of a cliche or a stereotype about the coffee in the Northwest, it's true. It really is. It's not just the quality. It's the importance put upon the availability of caffeine at all times.
We stayed at a fine, you know, little hotel, a 10-minute walk from Disneyland. And from moment one, it was like we had stepped through into we're in black and white. We're in the Kansas segment of Wizard of Oz because you could get a Bud Light. Or Bud, you know, and the coffee was horrible and served with the powdered creamer, and everything was served on styrofoam.
Of course, of course. Well, you are in Anaheim there, right? I mean, that's you know, I mean, that is Anaheim is a world apart from the rest of the United States. It's well, you know that. I mean, Dawn, better than anybody probably knows that. I mean, Anaheim is not like other places.
No,
in this
I actually have. When I was a teenager, my uncle was dating a woman who was a bartender at a country western bar in Anaheim.
Wow!
And she was about like 40-45 years old, with huge blonde teased hair, and tended to wear like T-shirts that said like "sexy lady," in glitter across the boobs.
Awesome. That's wonderful. I think my grandfather dated a lot of those. They were always named Betty, too. And they had a lot of things hung up. The thing I always remember, the version of that woman that my grandfather dated, we were always impressed because she had a diamond tufted leatherette bar in her house. And then above it, it just said, it had a little knick-knack that, you know, the knick-knacks that say things like, "Tea many martoonies." So, yeah.
It's a grown-up version of "there is no..." in our ool.
Exactly. That's and so you're in those cities and you just look around, and it is my wife and I will talk about this occasionally when we go someplace, usually someplace in Utah, where we say it is good to come here because you never, it's that whole thing of like, you don't really realize, you become inured to your surroundings unless you leave for a while and you go, my God, Portland's a fantastic place. Let's get back there as soon as is humanly possible.
It's 2 days down there in a car, even with three adults splitting time driving. And we came back on Friday, and we made the drive from Anaheim to Ashland, which was, we left at 9 o'clock and we got to Ashland at 11. And it was like, we are going to get out of California as quickly as humanly possible.
Yeah, no, whatever it takes. Like, we are going to be gone from here now.
Yes, right. Give me Oregon. And like, you get to Oregon and, oh, everything smells so much better here.
And the coffee thing is not to be underestimated, by the way, because I did grow up and lived the first major part of my life in Southern California, moved here to Portland. And it's one of the things I always told people when I first moved here. They'd say, why Portland? I go, well, I love the weather. I don't like it when it's like sunny and hot and smoggy all the time. I love the drizzly, rainy weather. I said, and there's coffee, good coffee, everywhere.
Yeah.
And people who knew me well were like, really? Because they knew how important coffee was to me. So it didn't surprise them I would move somewhere specifically because the ready access of good coffee.
Well, you know, that's the thing about – the strange thing about like being in New York is you would think that there would be good coffee everywhere because, you know, there's such a – because there is so much great food and there is – you know, and there's such a rich and many-layered cultural heritage and tapestry there. And you figure that coffee is part of not just the cultural experience of many parts of the world but part of the cultural experience of America. And it was – you know, it was one of the early cash crops, you know, that we would import, or that we would, you know, effectively a spice in that way. And it's just a huge part of what makes America run. I mean, America runs on stimulants. And they have stuff that's called coffee, and it's like it's hot, and you can kind of get it. And I guess people talk a lot about like East Coast, and I don't mean to turn this into like a West Coast, East Coast thing, because it's really not about that. But the people on the East Coast, they'll talk about like the Dunkin' Donuts coffee. Which is, you know, I guess it's okay. But even that, it's like if you're in like the actual heart of the city, like in Midtown or something, you're not even going to be able to find that. That is more of like a thing that like you got to get out to like, you know, the outskirts to find, in my experience.
As an East Coaster, the beauty of the Dunkin' Donuts coffee is that they put the cream and sugar in for you. So it's like going to a restaurant, and why does the food always taste better in restaurants? Because they add twice as much butter as you would add, but you get to pretend that they didn't. The Dunkin' Donuts coffee, they've added twice as much sugar as any human being needs in any cup of liquid,
and that
but you don't have to acknowledge it. That's why it tastes so good.
You get all the pleasure, none of the blame.
Plus, you're having it with donuts.
Well, I see, and that maybe really is the key right there. That's like if it was just like, you know, if it was the Molly's Morphine Company, and you go, their coffee's great.
Yeah, you just keep telling people that, you know. I go to Dunkin' Donuts every day because the coffee is awesome.
The Doritos I am eating with this pot, they are so good.
I understand this now. All right. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. What were we talking about? Oh, yeah. So the blah, 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 communism coffee shop, blah, 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 blah. And they run a tab for their – at what point – I'm curious about this coffee shop in Southeast, which shall remain nameless, where they, and I really don't know where it is, where they run a tab for their customers. At what point do you have to ask for that, or do they offer it to you at some point?
It's never been offered to me, but maybe because I'm always snarling about how slow my coffee is.
Are they like Masons? You have to go there, and eventually a guy like, or is it like a guy comes over and goes, skull and bones, except, you know, and you just, yes, and then he vanishes or something, like a puff of wind. I wonder about things like that and about whether, because you'll like, you'll be at those, and I... See, and now it is, now I'm snarking about it, and I always found it charming in a sort of Stars Hollow kind of way. But the idea that you go to places where the customer has his own cup behind the counter.
Yeah.
And I sort of – here's the thing about it. I find it charming, but it's angering at the same time because I've never been one of those customers. And you think, well, like, what makes Fred so special? Like, why don't I have my own cup? And then you start to wonder if there's something defective about you that no one will tell you about.
See, I don't think you want to be Fred, though.
Maybe not.
It's part of your charm. I think
you came close to that though at the McMenamins where we used to go for lunch while we were always plotting this show and everything. We were meeting all the time, and Rick and I are both similar in the way that we both like to go to places that we've been to before and that we know what to expect.
And you order the same thing.
And exactly. We ordered the same thing.
Yes.
And the thing is, we had been going there for about a month and a half when we got a different server than we normally got and discovered that the sandwich combination that Rick orders isn't actually on the menu. But they were happy to, like, make it for him anyway.
I had no idea.
And had never said, oh, we don't actually have that, like, on the computer. The guy would do some kind of arcane thing pushing the buttons to charge him for it.
Because you do that for Fred.
You do that for Emerson.
Well, I ordered it the first time, and he never corrected me. And then I just kept, you know, and you know, it's not like I'm, you know, I try to tip reasonably well, and I'm not a jackass. I try never to be a bad customer. I try to, because I've worked in food service, you know, in restaurants, not a lot, but enough to know that it sucks. And especially it sucks if you get some jag-off customers just making your whole day difficult. So I mean, you know, and I keep to myself, and I don't make no ruckus, and so. He has never corrected me, and so he'll just bring me that thing, you know, whatever I order, and that guy goes, well, we don't have that here. And it was like my whole world just immediately fell apart. It was like just –
But
seriously, I just felt like, well, what do you mean he's been dead the entire movie? I just – everything just imploded. But here's the weird tipping point.
The look on Rick's face was awesome too when the guy said, well, we don't really do that. And he just got this look at – but
I – The guy!
Yeah, what do you mean there's no Santa Claus?
The strange tipping point, though, and I don't know if this happens to you, probably to Dawn. I would imagine. See, here's the thing about Anna Griffin from The Oregonian. Because you interact with the people, and not that we don't, but it's in a sort of different way. We do it from a safe distance. Dawn and I have, this sort of like weird – it's not even a bell curve. It's a sort of – it's a thing like that, but without the middle section where it just – It's the idea that, like, it's the look at me, don't look at me syndrome. Pay attention to me from way over there and don't talk unless you're spoken to. But look at me all the time and be fascinated by me, but don't look me in the eye.
If you could love me but not acknowledge that you love me,
exactly.
That'd be great.
Well, no, acknowledge it via email.
Right.
But not, like, in person ever.
Just love me from way over there.
Yeah. But so there's a thing where it flips where, you know, and let's be honest, here's a human thing. Everybody likes – you get a little thrill out of being a regular at a place because the guy goes, you know, how you doing? You go, fine. He goes, hey, the usual. And you go, ah, that'd be great. Thanks. Or whatever. And it's like you kind of go, that's right. I'm known here. They like me. But it does tip at a certain point where then they if at any moment they want to drag you into a conversation or it's like they just start – like they want to sit down and chat with you. There are a number of places where it's like I go there, then they recognize me, then they kind of know me, then I'm a regular, and then it goes on and it's wonderful. And then one day, the guy just sits down and he says, hey, so I got an idea for a movie. And I go, oh, God. And then I can never go there again. And then that's the last day. There's a place I almost shouldn't say this, but there's a place that up until recently I got my hair cut. I get my hair cut. I get something done to my hair every like 10 days or so because I got this thing about wanting it to always kind of look the same. So I'll get like a haircut every 3 weeks, but then I just get like my sideburns trimmed or my whatever. And I'm kind of overdue for that now because I got to figure out where I'm going to go. Because I would go there about every 10 days largely because of Outlook Portland to just sort of make sure that I was all, you know, tidied up. And as a result, I had just accelerated the whole process from like going there, being recognized, being a regular. And then it's like the last time, then it's like the guy's like, so what's that like being on the radio? And I said, well, you know, it's, you know, blah, 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 whatever I said, trying to make the question go away in a charming sort of, you know, don't talk to me anymore kind of way. You know, not being rude, but indicating in a very polite way, you know, that like this was the answer. This was the sum total of the answer. I'm going to get back to my magazine. And I said something, and then at one point he wanted to talk to me about whether I wanted to come see his band play somewhere. And it was like, then I realized I was just like fighting this taffy monster, and there was no getting away. And it ended up with him like giving me his email address and like a copy of his band CD, and then asking if I could be expected to stop by like a party they were throwing at their house the next week.
Oh, but see, that is on him. That is not appropriate.
And you
are a customer. You are not a friend.
And I was, and to my credit, unless anybody think I'm a dick about this, I was actually really polite and really, you know, and I did not at any point indicate that it was making me really. It's like the barber why is it always barbers?
Because it is the most unnatural and awkward human interaction.
That must be it. It's like he's picking nits out of my hair.
I have not gotten my hair cut in 5 months because I don't want to go have to sit in a chair and talk to somebody.
I got my hair cut last week and I did something I have thought about doing a lot and I've never done, and I just decided to try it. Got a new woman who's never cut my hair before, and in the middle of things she asked me, you know, so what do you do? And I told her that I answer the phones at an insurance agency.
That's awesome.
Because there's nothing to ask about that. There's nothing interesting about that. There is no further conversation, really.
You know what I have done?
And it worked like a charm. She went, that sounds nice. And then she just shut the hell up.
I don't ever say that I'm sick or that I'm hoarse, you know, losing my voice or whatever, because then it's like, well, why are you in your chair breathing, you know, the chair infecting me? But what I will sometimes say is, I was kind of at a party last night, so I kind of don't have a voice today, if you just, don't mind. And I'll do that if it's a day where I just cannot take it, if I can't take it.
You lie to someone with a blade in their hand.
I do. Well, they don't know that, though. And I can lie exceedingly well. Let's have no illusions about that. But, you know, here's the thing. It's always, I don't know if I told the story in the air or not, but this guy that I was getting the best haircut, no lie, that I've ever had in my life, because he's one of those old guys named, like, Smitty, who, like, has the razor strop that he's, like, you know, and he does it, and he has the whole, like, hot lotion Godfather thing that comes out and the whatever. And literally, it is like, and it's near my home, and it's the best haircut I have ever had in my life. I mean, it was, I looked and I went, wow. But it was like he was just a talker, and he just went on and on and on and on and on. And it was like, you know, fly fishing and just whatever. And I was able to suck it up. I was able to tolerate it because that's how good the haircut was. I was like, okay, I can listen to him yammer on about, like, you know, Fisher v. Spassky in Reykjavik, you know, for like 2 hours or whatever. And then, like, I made the mistake of him just going, so, have you lived in the Northwest? And I said, yeah, I grew up here. And then I should have known that was the mistake. And we somehow got into this discussion of, like, other towns, you know, in the Northwest, and, like, where have you lived and where does your family live? And I revealed unwisely that my brother lives in Wenatchee. And so he then counters with, I swear to you, I'm not making this up. He said, well, you know, I try to get to Wenatchee out a couple times a year. We should go together next time.
Oh, God.
And it was that thing of, like, you know, it was that Greek myth about the boy who's being eaten by wolves, but he can't cry out because he doesn't want to alert the enemy. And I'm going, that's great. That's wonderful. Let's definitely do that. I'll give you my card before we leave. And in my head, there's just like a red light going off, you know, like a dive. And I have never gone back. I just can't. That is when you cross the horizon with me, you know?
It is getting your hair done. Is for those of us who don't like other people, is
I'm glad you just embraced
it. It's a horrifying experience. I mean, you guys, at least men can read things, and that's sort of part of the barbershop culture.
Right.
Women, this is part of what we do. It's like,
hello,
you know,
girlfriend, how are you?
Right. It's like, this is okay. You get your period, and you have to go sit in a stylist chair and talk to them. Those are the two crosses that you bear as a woman. And I just don't, seriously, I haven't got my hair cut in 5 months because I hate the whole.
Well, and you've got it even worse because you actually have children. I can say, they say, so do you have kids? And I just say, no, I don't. And that usually ends that conversation.
Well, no, I hate
because if
them.
You say, you know, yeah, yes, I have kids, then you have now opened the door for them to tell you every single thing about their children and their complications in their own pregnancies and their kids' illnesses and what they're studying in school and how much they hate their teachers until you just want to turn around and just punch them in the head.
If I were not a journalist, I would be like Crystal Gayle. You know, I would have hair or Rapunzel. Like, I would be the crazy hermit lady whose hair
Kleenex
is sticking out
the window. Kleenex boxes on your shoes.
Right. Because, I just go slip in interview mode. It drives my spouse crazy that, like, when we're with dinner with people I don't really want to be at dinner with, and I just start asking questions to just make conversation. And that usually works when you're getting your hair cut, because nobody ever asks. It's like a taxi driver.
Right.
The taxi driver just spends all day talking, but nobody actually listens. So if you can fake being interested, that goes a long way.
Well, what I've learned, you guys, if you can ask somebody a question that they probably don't get asked a lot, but something you suspect that they would love to talk about, the great thing about that is it's like every one of those eats up about 4 or 5 minutes of time. You know, and if you can ask like 3 or 4 of those maybe over the course of whatever, then that's, you don't really have to do a whole lot. Then you can just sort of stare into the mirror and wait for it. And you know, the great thing about working in radio is you become really finely attuned. Like you can just kind of, your mouth can just continue to work without you even really having to be present. And your ears will actually function separate of everything else. So you can just be reading Field and Stream or just, you know, looking in the mirror, making a laundry list of like things you got to do later. Got to go to the bank, got to buy some tea. And, you know, but you will detect inflection wise the minute that he is ending up. So anyway, that's how I lost my eye. And you go, that's really amazing. So how has that affected your life? And then you bought, and then that buys you another 5 minutes. You just wait for the silence.
In journalism school, they teach you to ask open-ended questions. That really works in the barber chair. And the other beauty of journalism school is I can fake being interested in anything. Really? That is fascinating. Tell me more about that.
My eyes are narrowing suspiciously.
My two favorite people who ever cut my hair for various reasons. There's one woman named Tyler, who unfortunately she moved from the salon I used to go to one downtown, and I just can't bring myself to go there because it's like downtown and it's really fancy, and I just feel like I don't belong there. But she was great because she had like scary tattoos of crows, and would tell me, and we both had pit bulls, and we talk about our pit bulls, and her husband like restores motorcycles or does something with motorcycles. And for some reason, she owns this pink Vespa that used to belong to Anne Margaret and that she rode in like Viva Las Vegas or something. But anyway, she was great because we always had stuff to talk about because she was actually genuinely interesting. The other stylist I really liked, when I worked at a Starbucks, the hair salon was right next door to the Starbucks, and I would go after like a whole shift at Starbucks, and I'd be completely exhausted, and the woman never talked to me, and she didn't mind if I just fell asleep while she was cutting my hair.
That's fantastic. I mean, that really is.
That is
really wonderful. That's what you aim for. Yes, we have just spent 25 minutes talking about the perils of having your hair cut at various salons and similar around town. That's what we do. Okay.
See, once again, first world problems.
Can you imagine, though, if we had been trying to do this like while being interrupted by traffic every 7 seconds or something over on... I mean,
let me tell you about the Banfield.
I mean, really, this... Well,
but
because
to get back to the haircut discussion.
And we were talking about this actually right before we came back from the break, that we'd contacted you about maybe coming on the KPAM yesterday and Wednesday, just to sort of, you know, because I figured the first day we're figuring out what we're doing. The second day we're kind of getting into the groove. Third day, change it up a little bit and, you know, and just... and plus we're probably going to... We'll be out of observations that aren't going to offend the audience by then, so we'd have
And let's face it, we're never seeing these people again anyway, so what the heck.
Yeah,
Day three, do what we like.
And Cheryl, somebody was like, oh, you know, Anna's lapping an interview, is not going to be able to make it in. And I had been on the verge of actually telling you not to come in anyway because I figured it would be so unbelievably frustrating for you going from here where it's like as soon as you would ramp up into something, we would have to interrupt it by talking about, you know, by just giving you like a bunch of, you know, like sports scores and telling you, you know, like what you could expect if you were driving into downtown Vancouver. So it is probably for the best that it did not work out.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
We're here with Anna Griffin, columnist from the Oregonian. Before we do anything else, I wanted to mention, so you said, is this coming, did you say this has been, this has already been printed or it's coming up, this thing about Lake Oswego and the streetcar?
That was in yesterday's paper.
I missed
Lake Oswego rant.
I'm so behind with the news, with the Oregonian, with everything. What was the reason for the rant?
Well, later this month, the powers that be in Portland and Multnomah County and Clackamas County will be signing off on the massive, almost at this point, $500 million extension of the streetcar from South Waterfront to Lake Oswego, a city that definitely needs some urban renewal help. And I just think that's stupid.
Is this part of that figure that you told me where it was like going to cost them $670 million to do like 12 miles?
No, this is separate.
Oh, this is
this
a different
is totally
$500
different.
Million. Dollars. Well, that's great because we're all washing money. Swimming in money.
It's all from the feds. The federal government has plenty of money.
Yeah. Can I just tell you, there was this interesting moment actually just speaking about KPAM, I want to identify who this was. There was this interesting moment, and I don't know why you just triggered this whole chain of thought, but we were joined by a telephone guest. I'll just say that. We were joined by a guest on the telephone, and And, you know, I, it's not my show. You know, it's Bob Miller's show. We're just sort of filling in. So I want to make sure that we sort of hew to, you know, whatever the kind of tone or content anyway that it usually is. And I said, hey, when you get that person on the phone before they come on, find out, you know, is there anything in particular they want me to ask about? Is there anything in particular that I should inquire about in terms of what they're prepared to discuss? And the request just came back. It was, please don't ask me anything political. I think specifically it was, please don't ask me about Randy Leonard.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And and that was just a little window into how things apparently usually operate at a station such as that. Anyway,
because what we want is not good radio, but
So they're building a streetcar that goes from the waterfront to Lake Oswego and then presumably back.
Yes.
And so this is, was there somebody, did someone ask for this, or was it just, did they find money under a shoe somewhere and they go, well, we got to figure out a way to spend it?
Well, they essentially have the right of way. So the land is easy to come by. You know, this is a region that over the last 30 years or so has bought into, with mostly good results, the notion that we use light rail to plan growth. And so because where you build light rail, businesses follow. Right. And you can do things to ensure that businesses follow. And it produces much denser growth than if you just send highways everywhere. And so it's essentially Lake Oswego's turn. It's you know, we built to Gresham. We built to Hillsborough. We're building to Milwaukee. So this is the next spoke in the wheel. If you want to visualize it that way. The problem, of course, is we're in the middle of a recession and Lake Oswego is doing pretty well.
Yeah, it seems like they're ahead of the game.
And so I think the timing is not ideal.
That does seem like it seems like there might be 5 or 7,000
really,
better things we could do with that.
Honestly, do they want grimy Portland people just riding public transportation out there?
But it's the streetcar. Grimy people don't ride the streetcar. They ride Max.
Okay, this makes me sound like an idiot, but what is the difference between the Max and the streetcar?
Well, they're different kinds of trains. The Max goes much faster and much farther.
And travel within the city, and the other goes from like maybe city to city?
Yeah, that's the idea. I mean, it's bigger trains.
All right. If I really seriously, and let's have no illusions about this, not like Rick Emerson's some sort of a class warrior. I mean, I am, but I make no distinction. I make no distinction about it. By which I mean that someday when I live in a place like Lake Oswego, I'm going to use that money not to build a streetcar, but to build some sort of impenetrable fence, which I can use to keep out the rabble.
We do not want you in. We're not going to make it easier.
See, that's the thing. Right now, I am the rabble. So, of course, it's my job to, I'm fighting on this side of the line. Later on, there's just going to be a dome erected over where I live just so I can keep the grubby folk out.
Well, and we've talked about this before, I think, on the show, that the streetcars and light rail, it is not about transportation. It's not about getting people from one place to another. It's not about taking cars off the road. It is about dictating how things will develop.
Right.
So,
you know, and they sort of have to make it palatable to you know, the people, which is why they say, you know, it'll be so much easier for you and your children to get to the mall.
And people prefer light rail to buses on general principle.
Which is a whole separate discussion.
Yeah.
I'm going to exercise just a modicum of self-control because I realize that Don and I've been talking and now the three of us have been talking for an hour and 20 minutes. And I think we've gotten to almost nothing, not entirely nothing. Almost nothing.
We're talking about important things.
Well, that's true. I guess what I'm just saying of the things that we teased at the top of the hour of the segments and the elements that we have here. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. At the news desk here is Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Now, I feel the need to clarify. It's not that your content is not nothing. It's just that Don and I foolishly at the beginning of the program say, here's a list of the things that we will absolutely get to within the next 2 hours. And I figure that I'm never going to get 100%. If I can aim for like 20%, then, you know, I can look myself in the eye later.
Did you pull that sound file out of the Dropbox?
That is in the Dropbox. Let's make that second. I'll have that for the next string.
Then let's do our Corpse Watch first.
All right. You always do that. Just as I'm pulling one piece of audio, you cue a second piece of audio.
I can talk about something else instead.
If you have the first story that does not have audio.
All right.
Thank you.
Let's see. It's probably buried down here somewhere.
Hate it when mom and dad fight.
Okay. Well, I found this interesting just because executives at theater companies who are attending a Las Vegas convention seem to believe that the reason that there's a drop in movie ticket sales is because movies just aren't very good. About 6,000 owners, vendors, and officials gathered at CinemaCon in Vegas to discuss and celebrate the industry. But the 20% drop in attendance is not necessarily because of the economy, they seem to feel. In fact, movie attendance is known to increase during hard economic times. Jerry Lopez, chief executive of AMC Entertainment, told the Los Angeles Times, "I think it all boils down to the quality of the movies. This year, we just haven't had those kind of movies that cut across all quadrants of age, race, and income. Ticket sales for theater owners are the worst they've seen in 6 years. Other consumer behavior, like the draw towards streaming Netflix movies, is also causing concern. But an important sign, they say, is poor response to films like Sucker Punch and Mars Needs Moms. The anticipated summer blockbuster season is still ahead, however, and big-budget features like Captain America the First Avenger, The Hangover 2, and Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides are expected to bring in moviegoers, and apparently they'd better, because theater companies haven't actually been particularly upbeat about what they've been having to show.
I really am of two minds about this, because this is one of those that's one of those things that people say. And by people, I mean message board users. And by message board users, I mean the people that ain't it cool, where they will constantly talk about, well, maybe if the movies they were making today weren't such crap. And I always just instinctively dismiss that as just a bunch of, you know, just a bunch of people who've started to turn into their parents. You know, it's the same people who say, well, music today. And you just, you know, it's not like when I listen to Oingo Boingo, you know, and you go, well, all right, whatever, friend. You know, it's so I instinctively disbelieve that movies or any form of entertainment now. I mean, the ratio is the same it's always been, I think. It's 90% of everything is crap. 10% of it is good. Yeah. But the deal is, it's just there is so much more of it now that, yeah, there's more crap, but there's also more quality. And there's more quality in greater places. I think it was a lot easier to forgive. I think it was a lot easier to forgive the faults in a bad movie 30 years ago when it wasn't being compared to 30 years ago, it was just, you know, you were comparing it to Dallas, you know, you were comparing it to an episode of The Rockford Files. And really, I mean, what kind of benchmark is that? If you're comparing it, if you can see the average movie in the theater now and you're comparing it to what you effectively got for free on Mad Men or Breaking Bad or something, maybe like you watch The Wire, you watch whatever, of course it's going to look terrible. I think it's it is as Elijah Muhammad said, that one does not know a dirty glass till a clean glass is held next to it.
Well, so I think that, the whole thing about the sheer amount of crap, you know, they keep going back. It's very, very, their vision is very narrow. They
make new movies, stop remaking old movies.
Well, they also keep going back and saying, well, traditionally movies have all, tickets have always been, sales have always been healthy, even if the economy was poor. And then they'll say, well, the actual price of a ticket right now isn't really out of step if you consider inflation and what has been before. But the thing is, what they refuse to, they don't seem to be able to look outside of their own industry. They'll blame Netflix, but it's like, but how about you also look at, you know, Hulu, Amazon, iTunes, video games, you know, again, illegal internet streaming,
right?
Home video. It's like, it's not just, you know, get out of like just blaming it on Netflix and Redbox and take a look at the fact that we live in a society now where we have so many incredibly inexpensive entertainment options that you're charging me, and then you're charging me $17 to go see a movie. You're going to try and charge me $20 to see a movie just because it's in 3D?
See, that's the thing. And that's it right there. I really mean this. I honestly don't believe what a lot of people always just say, which is that movies have gotten worse. I don't believe that. And I mean, yeah, there's always bad movies. There's always good movies. You know, and the ratio is always skewed towards the bad just because that just seems to be what we're wired to do. You just hit on it, though. It's not that movies have gotten worse. It's that there are many, many more options. And that movies, by definition, if you're going to Netflix, is what, like, what is the basic Netflix subscription a month now?
It's
like
$15 for
well,
three.
No, it's like $6.99.
Yeah, it's like $7.99, $6.99.
I think you can get it for $5.99 if you don't want any discs mailed to you at all. You just want streaming.
And it's like I say about the Napster service sometimes, which is where I get the majority of my music now, that if I take the $5 a month that it takes me to, you know, that it costs to subscribe to Napster, and if I divide that by the number of songs that I use every month and that I listen to and download, my cost per song is effectively zero. So via Netflix, which is where I watch most of my stuff now, you know, especially, you know, things like not first run movies, but, you know, recent movies, I'll watch them on Netflix. If I'm paying even $10 a month and I'm watching, you know, three movies a week, I mean, that drops the cost of movie. I mean, you're just talking pennies. So what this really means is that for it to make any kind of logical and aesthetic sense in terms of your pocketbook, that a movie you go see at Regal has got to be, I mean, Jesus, what is that? 42 times better than whatever I can get on Netflix. And that's a game you're never going to win. You will never be able to do that.
There's also, we talk about the market fragmenting and you know, everybody, there's something for every niche. And there's a really interesting piece in either Rolling Stone or GQ or Esquire in the last couple months about Hollywood and how the big companies have really narrowed who they're appealing to, you know, 18 to 34-year-old men.
Right.
Because those are the people who consistently go out.
Yeah.
And that's what, I mean, the blockbusters you just listed there were all popcorn movies aimed at young men.
Yeah, no, young guys really are. I mean, and it is always, I mean, you know, to be honest, I mean, they, you know, except for certain products, which I think were marketed at at a certain time, the housewife market, you know, in the 50s and 60s, where you had things that were, you know, say, mom, you know, dose your kids with, and then it would just be whatever. Most things have traditionally been advertised to men, you know, for any number of societal reasons that, you know, that we're all painfully aware of. And that is actually not – it's never gone away. It is just hyper-focused to now everything is just targeted at a guy who's like 23 years old wearing a Mountain Dew cap, you know, and, you know, waiting to see Tony Hawk fall off a cliff, you know, somewhere.
The most fascinating thing about where we are right now with this magical technology, like we were talking earlier on the show today before Anna got here, that, like, there's just so much technology and so many gizmos and gadgets and programs and things that just come so fast that it's now at this point where, you know, I've got, like, a handful of stuff that I wouldn't even have dreamed existed 15 years ago, and I only, you know, and I'm still trying to catch up with how to use, like, half of it, and it's like every single day there's something new, and I'm fascinated as somebody who's been a film critic for a long time of watching how the difference between the companies that seem to get it, who understand that we are headed in a completely different direction, and the companies that just don't. And like you were saying, a lot of the music industry, the radio, for example, a lot of industries are still just so mired in the way they've always done things and not looking at where anything's going. And then you look at Bobby and I were talking about this on Ham-Fisted Radio yesterday about DVDs and about how physical media is completely on the way out.
Right.
And one great bellwether of this, if you want to look at somebody who really gets this, the Criterion Collection, who have made their fortune all along on – they started on Laserdisc. Then they went to DVD. They charged a premium for their DVDs. Their DVDs would be like $60 a piece, but you knew it would be just – pristine and beautiful,
yeah.
and remastered, and they've just gone, hey, Netflix, Hulu, here, just have it all.
Yeah.
Here, just, we can't sell $60 DVDs anymore. It's not going to be on pieces of plastic anymore. Here you go. And it's like, that right there is a sign that it's just they're on the way out. It's dying.
But, you know, this week, I'm just going to have to guess at when we said stuff. I think it was here yesterday that we were talking about Netflix. They're going to be launching an original series, which is House of Cards. And they are so convinced that non-physical media is the way of the future that they placed a full two-season order for this. And, I mean, and it had to have cost them a lot, too, because, again, it's David Fincher and Kevin Spacey, and it's already an established property in certain sections of the world. So it really is a weird time, but the idea, it's if you just figure that, like, you know, you're paying, let's say $2 or whatever to watch a movie at home where you've got, you know, your own surroundings and your own food and your whatever. And if you go, well, that movie was definitely worth $2, then by definition, reflexively, the movie you see in the theater has to be 10 times better than that. And As much as we all snarked about James Cameron and Avatar, I mean, at the very least, at the bare minimum, you can say that he was trying to do something kind of different. I mean, it wasn't that different. It was just expanding on an existing platform. But at least he was trying to change it up a little bit. They were taking a stab at something that wasn't, you know, the same old movie.
One of the smartest things that I've read recently, and I wish I could remember who wrote this, but it was somebody who was writing about 3D movies. And he said that you know, they keep complaining and saying, oh, people aren't embracing 3D the way we thought they would. Oh, they're getting tired of it. They don't really want to spend, you know, $20 a ticket to see Mars Needs Moms.
Right.
And what he said was, he said, I don't think that you should charge 20% more for a ticket to a 3D movie. I think you should charge 100% more for a ticket to a 3D movie, and it should be awesome.
Yeah.
It should be an experience.
Or you know, when I was in New York last week, I saw this 3D movie. It was called A Play. You could actually go there, and it was amazing. It was like there were real people on stage in front of me singing and dancing. It was astounding. I mean, it was almost like I could have reached out and touched them.
Did you have to wear glasses for that?
No, it was better than HD. It was I have no idea how they did it. It must be some futuristic form of technology that we mere mortals on the West Coast aren't allowed to see.
I take my kids to a lot of movies because they're kids, and come Sunday afternoon, I have to find some other way to entertain them than play with them myself. and it is just so infuriating how many of these crap movies come out in 3D now. And you really have no other choice but spend the premium.
The weird thing about that is that kids... And this does sound like an old person thing, but it's really not about that. It's just about the age at which you become. It's not even that. It is the advancement or the state of a technology at which you first become aware of it. So everybody's benchmark for a technology or for an entertainment, more or less, is the way it was when they first found it. Which is why people latch onto certain kinds of movies and music because it's like that's what was popular when you first discovered rock and roll. And so yeah, you're gonna you think My Ding-a-Ling is the height of artistic achievement because by God, that's the first 45 you ever bought. And that's how we did it back then. But so when I say kids today, I mean really just people who are entering the film-going market today. Unfortunately, I think we'll use that 3D as a benchmark for how everything must be, which is regrettable, not because 3D is bad or because you can't make a good movie in 3D, but because 3D, I think, allows filmmakers, I think it becomes this bright, shiny object by which you can distract the studio from the fact that your movie is terrible.
And yet, exactly. The best kids movie I've seen all year was Rango.
Yeah.
Which was gorgeous, did not need to be in 3D, and wasn't. Nope.
Well, and I saw Toy Story 3 in just regular 2D, and it was glorious.
And Toy Story 3, I mean, it's Pixar, and so they made the most out of the 3D. But you don't have to watch it in 3D to recognize it's a great movie.
Yeah, they're 3D. And that's the other thing, is making the movies specifically for 3D also, as opposed to taking a 2D movie and translating it to 3D, which still does not work. It looks like crap. But yeah, Toy Story 3D, it enhanced it, but it wasn't necessary. But yeah, when you're forced to see something in 3D and it's crap.
Having watched Toy Story 3 probably 15 times since it came out, because it's one of the 10 DVDs my children will watch, it's a great movie.
Here's the thing about, and then we'll take a break here in a moment. First of all, A, because it's incredibly warm in the studio today, even more so than it normally is. Well, do you remember?
I was thinking, is this menopause? What?
No, it's.
Remember, a couple of days ago? Now I sound like my own parody of an old guy. Do you remember the other day when it was cool? Now it's warm. But the last few days, it's actually been really nice in here, and actually even a little chilly as the afternoon wears on. It's like by about 5 or 6 because they turn off the heat in here when everybody goes home, and so I'll be clacking away on the keyboard or whatever, and it'll be a little brisk in here. Today we're just back to it just being a we're getting a schvitz in here. So we'll take a break here. We'll let some of the air, literally some of the air, out of the room. We'll come back in. We're probably going to just do a few stories, skip to the top five, which is the top five songs I always seem to hear playing in a Winco late in the evening. And then Sarah and Greg are going to be in later in the afternoon, so we'll make room for them. We're here with Anna Griffin, columnist from The Oregonian. My final observation before we do that was that it's interesting that there is a sort of bell curve development when you're a kid. It's an actual bell curve where when you are very young, you do what some people then return to later on in their life, and I think Don and I are both this way, where you find a handful of movies, foods, places to go to, whatever, and it's like, and that's it, and you're set. You know, what do you eat? Well, I got these two restaurants that I go to, and that's pretty much it. Well, how about your entertainment? Well, what I was talking about last night, that I have just become so ingrained in this thing of just watching The West Wing, like on a continuous loop in my life, that last night I found myself watching a 12-minute documentary about C.J. Craig's Goldfish Bowl. No lie. That's on the season 2 DVD collection, which I watched digitally, by the way.
I had this question I came up with a few years ago, because there's always that traditional thing of what three things would you take with you to a desert island? And it occurred to me that it's actually more telling if you ask somebody if you could take with you the life work, the entire life's work of three different people to that desert island, and that's all you're going to get for the rest of your life, what would you pick? And I thought that ends up being kind of an interesting
Across all media?
Across all media.
Wow.
Just the life's work of three different individuals, and that's all you get forever.
Bill Bryson.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do one book, one movie, one music. Books, I would say Bill Bryson, hands down. And I say that with all due respect to the other authors I love. Bill Bryson, without exception. Music. God damn, I just don't know. I don't know that I can answer the other two. Like, in terms of visual and aural arts, I don't know. I have no way to answer the other two questions. I mean, there probably is an answer. I just don't know what it is.
Well, I think I found that it helps that if you think of somebody who has who is prolific and also very varied, because then that gives you
Woody Allen. Yeah. So Woody Allen, Bill Bryson, and then music. Yeah, I don't know. I'll never be able to answer that one. I got nothing.
Okay.
Anna Griffin.
I like chocolate.
And awesome. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. The heat's gotten to some of us. We'll be back after this. Don't you worry, pretty little head.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Get up early when the sleeping pill wakes me. I take a wake-up pill to fill with energy. I power on hard and I check my messages. But I don't have any messages. I take a driving pill and head to my car. I drive around a bit because work isn't very far. I call my phone and I check my messages. But I don't have any messages. All I know, driving on drugs feels better when they're prescription. All I know, the world looks beautiful. The world looks so damn beautiful. I feel fantastic. And I never felt as good as how I do right now. Except for maybe when I think about how I felt that day. When I felt the way that I do right now. Right now. I feel fantastic. And I never felt as good as how I do right now. Except for maybe when I think about how I felt that day. When I felt the way that I do right now. Right now. Right now. Work is anything but quiet these days. I try to mitigate my concentration haze. I can see the day unfold in front of me. So I take the stairs and hit the gym. The phone is ringing when I get to my desk. What was the sting? It's now a sharp pain in my chest. So I take a calm and next and just chill. And then it's time for lunch again. All I know is work is easy when you don't stress out about deadlines. All I know is I take my medicine. I always take my medicine. I feel fantastic, and I never felt as good as how I do right now. Except for maybe when I think about how I felt that day. When I felt the way that I do right now. Right now. I feel fantastic, and I never felt as good as how I do right now. Except for maybe when I think about how I felt that day. When I felt the way that I do right now. 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 I can't stay to work late. Gotta leave and get ready for my second date. With a pretty girl that I met at the pharmacy. Writing the prescription line. I take a pill for my social anxiety. I get a table and a nice bottle of Chablis. Now it's getting late and there's still no sign of her. I have another glass of wine. All I know is the wine lasts longer when you don't gotta share it with someone. All I know is the steak tastes better when I take my steak tastes better pill. Fantastic, and I never felt as good as how I do right now. Except for maybe when I think about how I felt that day. When I felt the way that I do right now. Right now. I feel fantastic, and I never felt as good as how I do right now. Except for maybe when I think about how I felt that day. When I felt the way that I do right now. Right now. Right now.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
History, so much biology, don't know much about a science book, don't know much about the French I took, but I do know that I love you, and I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be. Don't know much about geography. Don't know much trigonometry. Don't know much about algebra. Don't know what a slide rule
is four, but I do know
one and one is two.
And if this one
could be with you,
what a wonderful world this would be. Now, I don't claim to be an A student, but I'm trying to be. For maybe by being an A student, baby, I can win your love for me. Don't know much about history, don't know much biology, don't know much about a science book, don't know much about the French I took, but I do know that
I love you,
and I know that
if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be.
La ta 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 ta.
History. Biology.
Well, la ta 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 ta.
Science book. French I took.
Yeah. But I do know that
I love you.
And I know that
if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
You know,
we're filled with hate.
I was just
going to
say, really, I don't know what you all were doing during the break just now, but we opened the regular lair, checking email, etc., and then just spent the rest of the time, all of us doing a round robin about how much we loathe people, and yet inexplicably, we're all still here, and nobody's bleeding or dead. So you know, there you go. Maybe it's sort of is this kind of like an anti-matter and matter thing? Like you put all of us in a room, and suddenly there's just. All of our, the loathing we feel for humanity, it all kind of cancels itself out somehow.
Well, I mean, there are individuals that I like quite a bit, and both of you actually fall into that category. It's just people in general, just people.
The difference between people and humanity.
Yeah.
You dislike humanity. People, you can.
Some people.
People? You got to quit saying the word people, because then I always have to do that. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. Join us tomorrow, and our guests will include Mr. Big Jim Willig, who's going to be in the studio doing another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. Then we have some story that we were going to bring back tomorrow just for Jim. You were going to read it, and then I said, no, we got to wait till Friday. It was something having to do with sexual aids of some kind.
I don't remember.
He works at when he's not busy doing hilarious comedy for people, and here being a being a really great in studio guest, he works at one of our finer adult emporiums. He works at a porn store.
Are we going to talk about tasers today, or
there was something?
I feel like we've hit all the bases almost.
Well,
the sad thing is that we talk about stuff like this so much. That it doesn't stand out in my memory.
No.
did we? I don't know.
What story about adult AIDS were we talking about? I just completely forgot. There's so many.
I really don't remember, but there was a thing. It was either Monday or Tuesday where you said, and I got the story about whatever.
Oh, I know what it is. It's the one. It was going to be today's penis watch, but I can save it for tomorrow. I remember exactly what it is.
Yeah, because I had said, well, I got to save that for Friday. So, but you were actually.
Oh, here.
Would you like to hear what in an alternate universe you would have heard today?
I was about to get very disappointed.
Because the thing is, I don't even really remember what it's about.
It was this one.
Read the headline.
The headline is, I'm a ladies' man who can never make love. Andrew Lloyd Webber reveals prostate cancer battle has left him impotent. And there's a quote in there where he talks about he and his wife had decided not to use various sex toys and penis pumps because the devices were, quote, too gruesome to contemplate.
Okay, so there you go.
So there we are.
That's what she said.
I didn't know the prostate cancer part. See, now I just feel bad for snickering the other day when you read the headline because I didn't know. I thought it was just like he was less than a man or something and just was unable to function.
Well, I mean, he's alive. He's 63 and he's alive and he was in the early stages of it in 2009. But he, Yeah, but yeah, apparently he had this interview with Piers Morgan on the TV series Life Stories that Piers Morgan does, and he talked apparently at length about his use of. You know,
I thought
things.
That was a thing where they just put. Well, now we're just doing the story. I thought there was a thing that they where they put like a flexible like a metallic dowel of some kind, like a gooseneck lamp thing, in, and they could just sort of. All right, we're ready.
You know, I knew a guy who had one of those.
Is that true?
Yes. We were talking. In fact, we were talking.
Good thing we're saving this for Friday, yeah. So that Anna won't be offended by this.
We can talk about this on Friday because yes,
I like the noise. Could you get Barry White to make that noise though?
Baby.
Okay.
I like the I'm a ladies man.
I think that what has happened here is that we just by doing the Bob Miller show earlier this week, it was sort of like squeezing the end of the balloon and just all of the horrible news stories that we couldn't read during those 4 hours. They all just sort of got shoved down to this end of the sock.
Did you just occasionally on KPAM find yourself twitching and just Tourette's like coming out with things like penis, corpse,
no,
clown?
The thing that I actually had the most difficulty with, and we talked about this last week, so it's not a secret, is that to their credit, and I want to say, I don't want to make them sound like tight asses or anything. To their credit, they were very, because I said point blank, like, you know, and Rick Emerson is a professional, and also I like Bob. Bob's a good guy, and I know he's been a listener of mine for a long time. So I didn't want to screw with his show too badly. You know, it's like when you let somebody stay at your house. You know, you don't want to be like, you know, just, I mean, you want to be rooting around in their stuff, but you kind of don't.
Yeah.
And so I said, well, you know, just like what guidelines? I said, am I doing the Bob Miller show? You want to do like the Rick Emerson show, but it's called the Bob Miller show. Like, what kind of tone are you aiming for? And the only edict they gave us, the only thing they said, please, they said, if you could just not be like taking the Lord's name in vain all the time. That was it. They said, like, if you could just not, like with the Jesus and the goddamn, and if you could just not do that, because that is a thing that people find very, very grating and jarring sometimes in a way that is unsettling, which I know because I've had general managers tell me that over the years at various stations. So I was actually so focused on not doing that. And then every time I would say something, the first thing out of my mouth on Monday morning is I said, well, I swear to God. And then I immediately was like, ah, crap. And I just felt like I was off the rails for the next 3 days trying not to say that. So I didn't have time for penis. There was too much Jesus.
I never realized.
God. Jesus Christ.
Never realized how often I say, oh, God, yeah. Or holy something, yeah. or Lord. I really had no idea how often I do that until it was put into my head not to do that.
At what point does it actually become taking the Lord's name in vain? I've never quite...
I think when it's considered a swear.
But I say, oh, Lord, is that
– I don't think so because I know there are religious people who say, oh, Lord.
That's an exclamation, I believe, of surprise or perhaps if you're impressed by something, if you're staggered by some piece of information or particularly a tall building.
Say if it's an expression that Andrew Lloyd Webber can no longer – incorporate in certain conversations.
Exactly, yes. But that is opposed to the banging your hand with a hammer use of it or the this guy just cut me off in traffic – use of it. Or what do you mean I have to wait while you make 7 lattes for your friends? That's my thing. So so all my energy went to that. It's like there was no time for penis, Anna. I mean, it's like no time for sergeants, but smaller. All right. And this is all true. You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Very rarely do I say, is it the weekend yet? But today is a day in which I think my brain is just, I think I'm just really, I think I've developed some sort of a blockage and the oxygen is no longer getting to sections of my occipital
lobe. You guys have taken on a lot this week.
You see, but I can't complain about it because there's like a coal miner somewhere in West Virginia who's got black lung, you know, and he's just like, you know, living under a bridge. And, you know, so I just don't like to complain about those things. I will say that if you were listening to the Rick Emerson radio program and you find yourself being amused, and I know you do, you can thank the good folks at Squires Electric for making it possible. SquiresElectric.com is the website. You can find out more about it. But you can also – and here's an added bonus, as somebody noted last week. If you were listening to, I believe last Wednesday's Rick Emerson show, Joe Squires of Squires Electric was in the studio with us, and he explained – and when I say, like, in 5 easy steps, it really was just that. He explained how nuclear power works, how nuclear reactors operate in a sort of overarching, in a broad sense, and then what they're probably dealing with, you know, in Japan, and why it was such a, you know, why it was so difficult to extinguish or to neutralize, and how they were probably going to approach that in the future. And somebody said, oh, my God, I would totally subscribe to a newsletter of Joe Squires just giving me fun nuclear facts of the day. Depending on who you get, when you contact Squires Electric, you get Joe Squires come at your place, you can probably pester him with nuclear questions the entire time he's there. He probably enjoys answering them, and clearly it takes no brain effort whatsoever. You get our good friend Ben. Mm-hmm. You could probably talk to him about, talk to him about a little Battlestar Galactica, talk to him about maybe Caprica.
Cobbler.
So that, sure. Where he's living these days. Just depends. You know, it's luck of the draw. But you want to contact Squires Electric. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. If you are installing, upgrading, if you're repairing, if you're going to be renting your place out to somebody else, if you're going to move it into a house, you want to make sure you don't buy a pig in a poke, or in this case, a pig wrapped in some sort of electric blanket that's been miswired. You want to make sure that everything is as it is presented to you, and you can do that by contacting Squires Electric. If you're going to have an inspection happening at your place, your business, your restaurant, whatever, make sure you're going to pass all that stuff the first time, because, you know, it's not like if they come by and they say you got to put a different kind of grease in the fryers. I mean, like, you'd be taking down the walls and repairing the wire. I mean, that's like, you don't even want to know, from Agita, having to rewire your entire business. So find out sooner rather than later what issues you might be facing. Contact Squires Electric at squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. They are proud sponsors of this, the Rick Emerson radio program. It's a brief moment where I'm reaching back to the printer to find today's top five.
4, 3, 2, 1, fire.
When I excerpt the in-studio Paul and Storm version of the Penis Watch theme, I will excerpt the You and Jim version of the Top 5 theme as
and
well.
Aaron Mesh.
And Aaron Mesh. Was it Aaron Mesh or Robert Wagner?
No, it was Aaron Mesh.
Aaron Mesh.
Aaron Mesh, yes.
So last Friday, we were graced in studio by, I don't know if you were out sort of on the road doing things.
I was following you.
I didn't know. I figured you were just busy, like, you know.
She was willing and able and eager even to come in without you here, and I said, Let's wait till Rick gets, it'll just go to hell.
See, I figured that while you were at Disney, I figured you'd be busy saying, like, I'm not going to pay $12 for a mouse bar, you know, or whatever.
There was some of that.
So, so I will excerpt the Paul and Storm Penis Watch theme. I will have that for next week, along with the top five by y'all. So, it is the Rick Emerson radio program. Join us tomorrow when Big Jim Willig will be in the studio for another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. And later on this afternoon, a new episode of FunEmploymentRadio.com will be up at FunEmploymentRadio.com. It'll be around 6 o'clock Pacific time. In the meantime, in between time, here is your top five. These are the top five songs I always seem to hear playing at a Winco when I am there late in the evening, which is often, by the way. Here is Don Taylor.
Honorable mention, Eddie Rabbit, I Love a Rainy Night.
Yeah. Keep in mind, these are not my favorite songs. These aren't songs that I'm glad to hear playing. These are just songs that always seem to be on. As I'm just there, you know, trying to, like, comparing the store brand of box macaroni to Kraft and wondering, you know, why it is that, that the swirly kind is more expensive when there's really less macaroni per box there. And meanwhile, I'm being serenaded by the tones of Mr. Eddie Rabbit.
Don't you think he's a very hairy man?
He was 70s and 80s hairy. I mean, he had that whole...
Original joy of sex kind of caveman hair.
Yeah, or like if Faith Era George Michael had let himself go for about 5 months. You know, it was the all over, the neck beard. It was like an out of control Kenny Loggins kind of a thing.
Well, and then he had really creepy, big, wet red lips.
I'm not sure why this song makes me think of that, but it always does.
There's something about men who have those really oversized, big red lips, particularly if they also have facial hair. That just skeeves me out.
When you say the big red lips, are you talking about like just an overly plump kind of?
Yeah, and then a little too red and always kind of moist.
I know what you're talking about, actually, because I saw this. I was watching this documentary. It was actually really fascinating. It was a documentary about origami, of all things, which I thought would be dull.
I've seen that documentary. It's great. It's
freaking amazing. It actually ended up being really, really fascinating in a way that, like, I didn't, you know, because it was like Netflix was, if you liked Helvetica, because I watch Helvetica, now it's like, you know, you'll love this 4-hour history of the pencil. But I watched this origami thing, and it was great. But there was this guy they interview, and he's like, one of those kids, he graduated from high school at 5 and, like, you know, had his master's at, like, 9 or something. But he has these large, kind of very plump, kind of bubblegummy sort of, they look, I mean, I would imagine if you were, you know, somebody who found him attractive already, you would like to be, they look very kissable. They look very sort of soft and plump and whatever, but they're actually so large, and he's sort of a weird looking guy anyway, that I actually found them a little off-putting. And I was just, I was sort of glad when they quit asking him about origami or when he would answer off screen, because it was like the lips became sort of hypnotic. It was like a magician's pocket watch being waved back in front of me, you know? Yeah. Eddie Rabbit, though.
Eddie Rabbit.
He was hairy.
He was.
Also, he's dead. And these are the top five songs I always seem to hear playing in a Winco when I am there late in the evening. Don Taylor.
Number five, Jewel, You Were Meant for Me.
This just seems to be designed so that if you are a single person shopping late at night, you will just go directly to the ice cream aisle and then buy a fifth of Smirnoff on the way out or something, and then just spend the rest of your time weeping. I hate this song. I hate everything about it.
I actually like the song. I heard a recording of the man, the songwriter who wrote this.
You don't care for Jewel's version,
right? And I heard actually his version of the song, and you appreciate that it's actually a really good song. I just don't like her little jazzy. No, I just don't like her voice.
Well, she's just it is what is supposed to sound. I think is a sort of casual or smoky, but it's just lazy. It is lazy singing. She just doesn't. She does that thing of. There are certain people who have actual smokiness or soul or a sort of, you know, like a very soothing, but almost an intense but mellow sound of their voice. If you hear All Alone, Strange Fruit.
Billie Holiday?
Billie Holiday, who didn't wail. She was sometimes very, very low-key, but it had this sort of intenseness to it, even though it was, you know, it was actually very, she was almost whispering it sometimes. Jewel just does this thing where she just doesn't inform the words all the way. And that's supposed to pass for you. No, she's very sultry.
Well, it also reminds me that we went through this whole period of musical history where, much like we just recently went through something where all guys had shaggy hair and sounded like John Mayer.
Yeah.
All female singers played acoustic guitar and sounded like little girls.
Yeah, no, it's true.
And it gives folk music a bad name.
It really does. I can't get past the part where she's talking about making a smiley face out of eggs.
This is like on 1,000 bad mixtapes, you know? Of relationships that did not last.
You find it in a basement somewhere, and it's, you know, John's Songs, Volume 7.
We were not meant to be together.
So I lived in San Diego for a piece before I lived here, and there was a place in San Diego. It's no longer there, but there's a place in San Diego called Java Joe's, which is a coffee house that was right. It was in Ocean Beach, right at the beach, and it was a great, great place. But it also became, I don't want to say notorious, but it had a little notoriety as the place where Jewel was not discovered, but where she would frequently perform. On open mic nights, up to the point where she was discovered, and then she tells that stupid story. I lived in a van, you know, or whatever, and it's like that's where the van was, or something. And so you just go into the bathroom, and the bathroom is just covered with Jewel sucks graffiti. And apparently, the women's bathroom is the same way. It's like every square inch of it is just covered with Jewel can eat me. So apparently, not loved back in Java Joe's.
There are certain artists who you are very happy when they become big stars.
Yeah.
And then there are certain artists who, when they become big stars, you realize that you never really liked them to begin with.
And you wonder who owed who a favor.
Right.
And also, fix your teeth. I mean, really, honestly, you don't have to get big Resnick caps going on, but fix that thing.
Just grow
snaggle up. Tooth.
Be
nobody.
An adult.
Yeah. I mean, come on. All right. You're listening to the top five songs that I always seem to hear playing in a Winco when I'm there late in the evening. Don Taylor.
Number four, TLC, Waterfalls.
And this is right at the guy's going, attention shoppers. Don't forget, Kleenex Puffs. Now with 20% more lotion available on aisle 8.
And the razor blades are on which aisle?
And you're just wondering, and that's where you have this... Where the camera does a long pullback, sort of Wrath of Khan style, and you just think, like, where am I and how did I get to this point in my life? Why am I here?
This song's one of the reasons I stopped listening to the radio on a regular basis. Because it was just always on for a period there. Always on.
That's almost a feat, actually, that if you can point to a specific song as being one of the reasons that you went, radio, not for me.
Don't go chasing waterfalls.
I remember this.
Aren't they pretty much like a fixed thing?
Well, you could chase them and catch them. It's very easy. Aim higher.
They're right there.
It's just walking, really. That's not chasing. That's just getting out a map and going, yeah, it's about a mile and a half.
There is no hunt involved now.
Did someone mistake the whole concept of chasing rainbows with chasing waterfalls and then just wrote a song without realizing they were mixing their metaphors?
That was it. There's Eddie Cantor's estate was on the phone. You know, no, change it. What's like a rainbow? Water, sure, go with it.
Unicorns, oh, we can't do that. They aren't real. Waterfalls will make sense, though.
I remember that when Lisa Lopez, there's a car wreck, she died in their car wreck or whatever. It sounds like such a horrible thing. I remember just kind of pausing and going, she's dead? Okay. And then I just continued typing or, you know, staring at a wall or whatever it was I was doing. also there seems to be, it's not like I'm, it's, you know, it, I mean, whatever, it's not like everything has to sound just like stuff that I like. This just seems to be one of those songs that sounds like a really plasticky, this is like a song that you would hear playing like at a food court or a Claire's Boutique, and it would be that version of like actual R&B.
It feels like late stage Stevie Wonder.
Just... But, yeah. When everything was made, when everything was done on a single keyboard where he pressed the demo button.
Can we take a moment, too, to talk about Lisa Left Eye Lopez and how horrible that is as a nickname? I mean, you know, I've got a bum knee, and if people just started calling me Right Knee, I'd be offended. My feelings would be hurt.
You there, stain on shirt.
Yeah.
And by the way, today you'll see that
you
I am...
You droopy eyebrow. Yeah, that sucks.
I am hoist by my own petard today. This is what I did my karma for mocking the stain that you had on your shirt that one day. As I was leaving
which,
the house...
Which day would that be?
Just as I was leaving the house, at that point when you look at the clock and you realize there's no time to do anything about it, I actually did, in fact, get a little tomato sauce on my shirt right here. Yeah. So
that's
go.
Why I never what wear I white, ever.
The only time I wear white is if it's underneath black. You know, but it's, you know... And it's just one of those things where it's, you know...
You just sounded because about like a 14-year-old right there.
Also,
because it's so cold in the studio, because I want to make sure that I'm layered here, because it gets a little chilly here late in the afternoon.
Also, because I am a round person, if I wear white, I look like Babendum.
Okay, this song is done. We're listening to the top five songs I always seem to hear playing in a Winco when I'm there late in the evening. Don Taylor.
Number three, Genesis, Invisible Touch. I hadn't really thought about it, but yes, this is one of the songs that I always hear when I'm, like, at the supermarket or something.
Like Jewel says, you were made for me. This was made to be played in the back of a shopping center somewhere. This is one of those songs that they will play, and it's like as the afternoon wears into the night, songs like this come up with greater frequency because they want to keep you awake and alert and either working or shopping or some combination of the two. There's a fascinating article that... like the Atlantic or something, they ran a few years ago about Muzak and about how, because Muzak is not just elevator music, you know, they do, when you hear piped in music anywhere, the odds are good that it's Muzak, and they have a whole algorithm about what kind of songs play at what time during the day, like in offices. People come back from lunch, they've had food or maybe a beer or something, and it's like, they're just, you know, like, hey, F this job, I hate it, and they start to stare at the desk for a while and not work, and the music starts to peak and starts to get a little louder, a little peppier, the beats per minute goes up, because they figured out that is the way to get better productivity out of people, you know, and you don't actually have to give them healthcare or anything to do that, you just play Genesis, and apparently it has the same effect. And also, back like at Winco, when you're like, maybe I should just go home, and then you hear this, you go, no, I'm going to go see how many different kinds of pulped orange juice they have. You know, and then you're just there spending like $200 more than you anticipated.
Why are you at Winco late at night?
This is also one of the songs that if somebody like, if it wasn't playing and someone said, sing Invisible Touch, you'd be like, I don't know the words to Invisible Touch. But then as soon as it starts playing... And you hear Phil Collins sing, you realize you know every word to the song to sing along with.
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, it's like a buried memory. It's like a repressed sort of, but then they trigger it and it all comes flooding back. I try never, ever, ever, I mean, unless I have to, I try never to go to a supermarket during the day. I try to do all my shopping late at night. Because, again, the whole thing of the people, and it's like, you don't want to, and there's always a bunch of grubby-faced children wailing about something or other. And then I just find myself, you know, in some endless line. Now, sometimes there's a line at night because there's only, like, the one checker. And frustratingly, they turn off that U-check thing, like at Safeway,
yeah,
especially.
Yeah, Safeway at night is horrible.
But I will trade the waiting a little bit longer in line for the one checker or for, like, the guy who's stocking the shelves to come up and activate their register and ring me in. I will trade that for the fact that I can wander all the rest of the supermarket and sometimes never encounter another person. It's like how Elvis would rent an entire movie theater whenever he wanted to go watch something. It's sort of like that. And, of course, then Winco is just interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Winco is just... As you said about the, you know, going to a place like Anaheim every now and again, so you understand who you are and who the rest of the world is, that's like going to Winco.
I prefer Sussudio era Phil Collins, honestly.
To me, it's like this could just become Sussudio at some point in the song, and I don't think I would notice.
That would, in concert, they would do that for you, I think.
This is the mega mix.
I remember reading one of those interviews with Collins where he was talking about Sussudio and them saying, well, what does that mean? What is Sussudio? What is that? He's like, oh, I was just writing the song and playing it, and I needed to put some words in there, so I just started going, Sussudio. Okay, that sounds good. I'll just leave it. And I just thought, well, that's lazy.
It's the
really? You just thought, good enough. Nonsense words.
It's the Spadoinkle method of songwriting. Or the early REM method of songwriting, depending on which side of the musical alley you
took. Or that closing theme to WKRP.
Yeah, where there's just
we like it without real words.
Where there's just like some Ed Wood guy in the booth going, brilliant, cut, print. You know, and you're just like, no, I was just humming it. No, it's already in the store. These are the top five songs I would seem to hear playing in a Winco late in the evening, Don Taylor.
Number two, Kenny Rogers, Lady.
I hate this song so much.
Please to explain.
I just.
Lady.
Oh, it's.
I'm your knight in shining armor, and I love you.
Do I really have to explain why I hate
you
that?
I don't know that I would go out of my way to listen to this. I would say that I have maybe a mild dislike for the song, depending on the mood I'm in. I think it's strong to say that I hate it.
It's kind of, to me, it's a little bit like, I think I hate it for the same reason I hate it when people describe themselves as a survivor. There are some things that you should never say about yourself, and I'm your knight in shining armor is something that no person should ever actually say.
Okay.
I prefer Islands in the Stream, Kenny Rogers.
Boy, that's a
really
song I hate. That's a song that I just... And the thing is, I don't dislike Kenny Rogers, and I love Dolly Parton. I cannot stand Islands in the Stream. We were just talking about that with... What's his name? With Ron, the sports guy at KPAM, because he's a Bee Gees fanatic or whatever. We got into an Islands in the Stream thing. The thing about this song is that it just conjures up, I think, an era in American and musical history, and also just a time in, like... time in my life that I just, you know, it just seemed like everything on the radio sounded like this. It was all like mellow 70s gold stuff. It was like, it was all this or Anne Murray. And it was all, you know what these songs are? These songs are big glasses of really warm water.
This, if I heard this playing at Winco, I would want to crawl into one of the freezers and just stay there just to get away from it.
I just think that I'll qualify. Any woman who would think that this song is romantic is somebody
else. I'm
your
knight in shining armor, baby. I'm a ladies' man.
Who also likes the song, you know, You're Having My Baby.
Yeah.
Is she wearing a shirt that says sexy lady on it?
There are, but those women exist. I mean, it's, you know, they... you know, I would imagine they have to be.
We all just want to be taken care of, Don. Just admit it.
True.
Because when you hear a song
deep
like this...
Deep down inside, we're all chattel.
When you hear a song like this, you know, you can just see the liver-spotted hands of an A&R man going, I have here results of a focus grouping we did earlier. Women like... they like things that are shiny, and they like knights, apparently. So we got to put those two words together somehow.
Why doesn't he make fried chicken anymore?
Kenny Rogers?
Yeah.
Do the Rogers Roasters close?
I don't know.
I never went to one
forever.
Of those. Was there ever one here?
I don't know.
I talked to somebody who, she was a server at the Kenny Rogers Roasters, and she said the very worst part of it is that all the music that plays there is Kenny Rogers songs. And she said that, of course, the average length of a stay by a patron there is like 29 minutes or something. So they're on a loop because they time it so that during your 29-minute visit, you will always hear The Gambler and Coward of the County. And so you are never more than 26 minutes away from hearing either one of those songs. And that, I got to tell you, if you are not in the ninth circle, you are between 7 and 8 and headed to 9.
I think everybody who works in retail in any fashion, though, has a story like that. Because like mine, it was the year I worked at Starbucks. And at Christmas, we had to play the Starbucks Christmas
Yeah.
And at that point, there was only one. There was one Starbucks Christmas CD, and it had, I believe, 12 songs on it. And it played over
and over.
And if I had to hear that jingly sleigh bell, you know, sleigh ride song one more time, by the time the Christmas season was over, we all just wanted to kill other human beings. It was just, you'd hear it, it would start, and everyone would just go, yeah, yeah, you know, and then you'd just like go back to making your frappuccinos and twitching.
Just as a final observation about the Kenny Rogers and the women who love him, would you, you know, and he's been divorced 6 times, so clearly, you know, he's, you know, there's some sort of target market out there. Would you agree that the women who listen to the song and go, this really, this speaks to me. This is that they are the same kind of women who look at a guy with Kenny Rogers' facial hair and they think, that's exactly how a man should look.
Yeah, I would say so. Because the thing about Kenny Rogers, and there are Kenny Rogers songs that I actually will admit I like quite a lot. Kenny Rogers has tiny little cold eyes.
Yeah.
And yeah, and when you hear about how many times he's been married and about the DUIs the slapping around and stuff, you kind of go, Kenny Rogers isn't really a... He has a warm-sounding voice, But I don't think he's actually a very nice man.
Well, it's like the Eddie Rabbit thing, though, that, like, he is just, there's a certain kind of guy from a certain era that looks like that.
It's sort of the Burt Reynolds in Playgirl.
That's what I'm talking about. And you can't quantify it, but
those
you know.
Those are not women. Those are ladies.
Or the guy in the logo for Jer Bear's mattress warehouse. If you've seen that fella.
Don't. I'm going to choose my words carefully.
Don't say anything about Jer Bear.
No. Ask Sarah Dillon about the Jer Bear guy. Not on the air.
Okay.
Off the air. You don't even have to get her drunk first. Next time you see Sarah, just go, hey, tell me about the Jer Bear guy. And just sit back and listen. And I'm sorry to do that to everybody else, but ask Sarah that if you see her in the kitchen later. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. These are the top five songs I always seem to hear. And then we'll wrap it up after this. By the way, we want to thank our guest Anna Griffin from The Oregonian. You can read her in print in The Oregonian or online at OregonLive.com. What is coming up that people want to be reading?
Yeah. Tomorrow I'm writing about a follow-up to the column I did about a month ago about Marshall High School and
The prom.
Yeah, they wound up having a spectacular prom and people donated close to $25,000 in cash and dresses.
Fantastic.
And makeup. Yeah, that's great. Nice work, folks.
In print in The Oregonian or online at OregonLive.com. Tomorrow we'll be joined by Mr. Big Jim Willing in the studio for another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101. This is all true. Don Taylor, what is the number one song I'm most likely to hear late at night in a Winco?
Oh, well, that would be Ann Wilson and Mike Reno, Almost Paradise.
Wow.
Also known as the love theme from Footloose, by the way. Here's the thing. I really like this song, and I shouldn't, you know, maybe, I mean, by all rights. I mean, this falls into, this sounds like a lot of other music that I don't care for, but there's, first of all, you win me over just by the three syllables of Ann Wilson. You put Ann Wilson on anything. You go back and have Ann Wilson sing Waterfalls, I'll listen to it. It doesn't really matter. Mike Reno, I'm sort of indifferent to. I love Ann Wilson, and, you know, I'm a casual fan of Footloose, I guess, but I will tell you that this... I always, when I hear this song, this song is merged. It's married in my head. If you ever have two songs that are joined in your head for no real reason except maybe a specific incident or a time in your life, this to me is always married to Time After Time by Cyndi Lauper, because they are always the songs to which I would try to work up the nerve to ask this cute girl Melissa to dance when I was in sixth grade. And then, of course, I never did. Spotty, spindly, hideous. But I would, as these songs would play, I would just stand against the wall in, like, the church gymnasium going, someday I'll know the touch of a woman, but that day is not today.
Almost paradise.
There you go.
Yeah.
How could we ask for more?
It's okay to feel embarrassed for me. Everybody, you can just do that right now. Okay. Thanks for joining us, everyone. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We come to you live each and every weekday for the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff. Executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakawa. We want to thank our guest Anna Griffin. You can read her in print in The Oregonian online at OregonLive.com.
My hair's getting bigger just listening to this. I suddenly crave shoulder pads.
Growing extra zippers. We'll be back tomorrow with Big Jim Willig in the studio for another edition of Humor Me Comedy 101. Don't forget FunEmploymentRadio.com coming up today at 6 p.m. It is Thursday, March 31st, 2011, and that is The Frequency, Kenneth. As always, thank you for listening. Be safe. See you all tomorrow. Bye now. Yeah.